Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
D1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. For the first time since 2020, Ohio State will play for the Big Ten Championship. The top-ranked Buckeyes dominated number 15 Michigan 27-9 to cap a perfect 12-0 regular season. It's the 10th such season in program history. Ohio State will head to Indianapolis to battle 12-0 Indiana Saturday night at 8 o'clock. IU hasn't won the Big Ten since 1967. Ohio State's a 5.5-point favorite in this one. In the NFL, the Broncos beat the Commanders 27-26 last night in overtime. Denver's 10-2 and on top of the AFC. Week 13 wraps up tonight in New England. The Patriots host the Giants at 8:15. In the NHL, the Blue Jackets battle the Devils tonight at 7. You can hear it on The Fan with coverage at 6:30. And the basketball Buckeyes lost to Pittsburgh at the buzzer for the second year in a row. Hear from OSU's head coach today at noon on the Jake Diebler Radio Show. This update is sponsored by Roosters. For every $50 you spend in Roosters gift cards this holiday season, you'll receive a $10 Roosters bonus buck back.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Barry here.
Oh, Reese came in and he's handed me papers.
Yeah.
And then, he said, "You see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me." Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
Oh, baby. Let's do it live on a Reaction Monday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. I want you to take yourself back. Allow your mind to go back to where you were a year ago on this Monday. Just for a moment. It won't last long. Trust me, there's a point to all of this. Go back to a year ago on this Monday and remember what you were thinking. I want you to go back to a year ago this past Saturday. And I want you to look. Remember the look on Ryan Day's face when he looked back to midfield and saw a melee break out at the center of the horseshoe. As they tried to plant a flag. I want you to remember the look on his face. I want you to remember the press conference that follows. I want you to remember the team meeting that took place after that loss. And then I want you to consider this. After maybe his darkest moment as a coach, Ryan Day and his program have not lost. They finished out that playoff run, beating their opponents by an average of 36-18. That was the average score. It's the average score en route to a national title. Do you know what the average score is this year? 37-7. Facing his darkest moment as a coach, Ryan Day chose to fight. And his program chose to fight. And since doing so, not only have they never lost, nobody's really been close. They've buried people for a year straight. They have beaten you any way and every way that they could. And if now you go back to Saturday and you think about a drive that lasted 20 plays over 81 yards and took 11 minutes and 56 seconds off the clock and generated 2 points. And I want you to think back to a four-game losing streak many a time when you were told your team wasn't tough enough. They didn't need to throw the ball Saturday. They just ran it right down their throat over and over and over again. And post-game, when given the opportunity to fight, what did Ryan Day do? He walked up to Sherrone Moore and said, "Why don't you get your team off the field? Get them out of here. We're not planting any flags here today." That's a program. That's a program to be proud of. That's a coach. I know many of you probably were out there going, God, plant a flag. Plant a flag on him. Get all the unsportsman likes. And there were plenty of those. There were plenty of those. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Having a rooting interest in this game or observing this game or covering this game as I have for so many years. There was no sort of proof once they only got a field goal after the interception and it was 6-0. There was nothing that happened after that that gave you any fear at all, or should have, because rational people would say they can't do anything on this defense. They cannot move the ball up and down the field. And yet, it's still nervy until halfway through the fourth quarter. That's what 121 times you've done battle does to you. That's when you've seen everything in a rivalry. That's what it does to you. I don't think there's anything better in sport than what happened on Saturday. Was the game great? Sure was for a Buckeye fan. Sure was around here. But you still had the nerves all the way to the very end. And that roadmap over the last year, never beaten. And in many times, dominant. Guys, 36-18 in the playoff. This season, the average score is 37-7. They're bombing people. And they bombed Big Blue on Saturday.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest images maybe ever of this rivalry will be the one of Caleb Downs and Ohio State players sitting in the stands with the fans while in front of them on the field, you had a bunch of Michigan players, one of them with the last name Herb Street, standing in the middle of the Big House on the M logo, trying to protect it from something that was never going to happen. Because you had heard Ryan Day say at the beginning of the game, they're going to win with humility. And at the end of the game, they're going to win with humility. Like, they didn't need to do anything that was beneath them. And planting a flag like that would have been beneath them, because losing to Michigan that many times is beneath them. And what with the Michigan players and their clown head coach Sherrone Moore worried about is less and beneath what this Ohio State program has been. I was looking back just over the last, I don't know how many ever years Ohio State's played football, and only 10 times have they had a perfect season. I don't think, I mean, a season where they've won all of their games. There are several where they've tied and not lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's ever been one that's felt as good as this one. Because of what you did at the end.
Exercised a lot of demons, Reese.
You did. With still more to do. With still more to look forward to.
Yeah.
And that's what makes rivalry great, right? Is because there's so much to lose and there's so much to gain. And as somebody, as we've talked about growing up in the 90s, as much pain as there was, it made the last two decades so joyous, that much more joyous.
Yeah.
And as much as the last 4 years have sucked, those last 4 years made Saturday feel that much better. And Bo, it was interesting. We talked about it last week. I was a bundle of nerves going into this, and I was a bundle of nerves Saturday morning. But when that ball kicked off, for some reason, I wasn't nervous anymore. Even when Jordan Marshall ripped off a big run and Michigan had a nice first drive.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I saw Minnesota do that. I saw Purdue do that early in the year. It didn't really, really bother me. And then Julian throws the interception and I just kind of chuckled inside.
Yeah.
But like once they got on the field, I don't know why. I was just confident in that defense and Matt Patricia. And that's why I got this pencil in my hat today, because that guy is just something different. But if you're a Buckeye fan, you had to feel really, really good for Ryan Day. And hopefully now any of the questions and any of the criticisms and all of that stuff can go away. I know we're spoiled. We've talked about it before on the show, and we were talking about it this weekend. Every other program in the country has had dips in the last 50 years. Ohio State really hasn't had any. I may have had a season here or there, but for the most part, Ohio State would be in every 12 or 16 team playoff. They would be in them over the last 50 years. And so we're spoiled as a fan base, right? And we want perfection. But hopefully now the monkey's gone, all the criticism can go away, and Ohio State goes out and gets this back-to-back national championship for the first time in school history.
Yeah, there's so much to this. And one of the narratives that was really drove me nuts all weekend was this notion that they kept, and I guess technically it was true that they hadn't beaten Michigan since 2019. But of course, Michigan bailed in 20 with COVID. They had a COVID outbreak. I'm sure they did. That was one of the most garbage teams of all time. And what would have happened if you would have played them in 2020? Coming off of beating them in 19, 56 to 27, and 2018, 62 to 39. And then a couple of them, you have the straight up Stallion scandal in the middle of it. And there's a couple of times when they were just better. Michigan was better a couple of times. They're not anymore. And they weren't last year. And damn it, if it took that to get this run of dominance, then I suppose you sign up for it. This is stupefying stuff, guys. It's really stupefying stuff. Do you know that since Ryan Day got on campus as the offensive coordinator in 2018, the Ohio State football program is 95-11? Just think about that. 95-11. You think about the success that we enjoyed under Urban and Tress and all of it. This has been a golden era of Buckeye football for like 2.5 decades. And this stretch that they're in right now is as dominant as anything we've ever seen. Let that stat line run over you. Let it wash over you. 20 plays, 81 yards, 11 minutes, 56 seconds. It netted you 3 points. It may have been my favorite field goal drive in the history of football because there was nothing more emasculating than that for the Michigan man. And now you've got Indiana. There's a lot of layers to this stuff. Some incredible individual performances from your quarterback, your defense, your two receivers who looked great. There's a lot to unpack here in what was quite honestly one of the most bonkers weekends of college football that I can ever remember, lasting well into midnight, continuing into Saturday with this crazy coaching carousel that happened. There's a lot to get to. We're going to put it all into perspective over the next 3 hours. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Wake up with The Fan. Eat lunch with The Fan. Go to bed with The Fan. Dream about The Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
The Fan.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
A coach speaks, we listen. Ryan Day's weekly press conference comes your way every Tuesday at noon.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Come on. Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A partly sunny and cold start to December today. We'll see temperatures only in the upper 30s. And then for tonight, lows drop into the 20s. With snow developing overnight, could have some heavy bands possible. When all is said and done, we are looking at several inches into the Tuesday morning commute, which could make it messy, so plan ahead. We do start to dry out and the snow tapers off by the second half of the day on Tuesday. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
It's Reaction Monday, where our highly trained experts talk football.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
Your home for reaction and overreaction, The Fan. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
You know, it's funny, the boys are younger and their, you know, experience is mostly, you know, the last 4 years and going back to, got to go all the way back to 19, which I don't even know if Bootsy remembers much at all. I'm not sure if Beamsy remembers much at all either. And watching with them, and they were largely well behaved with it. There wasn't a whole lot of football. They were pretty locked in the whole way. The thing that was interesting, like they wanted the fights, like they wanted people to shut people down. They loved like Jeremiah with the year number one. There were so many of those things. It was cathartic for so many young fans and old fans to have something like that. And sometimes you yearn for that. There wasn't any of that, or not much, really. There was a million other angles to this thing. And there was the third drive for Ohio State, to me, was when I felt pretty good about things. Because the first play for Michigan, they kind of go right down the field. Marshall has the big run. They kick the field goal. It's 3-0. Then we go two plays. Now, the two plays made me feel very good about things to come, because obviously it was inclement weather. The first play of the game is an incomplete plastic Cardinal tape. You go, okay, he's good. He's good. Then the next one, basically they just fooled Julian into thinking that it was a man, and it was a little bit of cover two on that side, and the corner just stopped and fooled him a little bit, but it's an interception. But then they held them to 3. And several Michigan folks, John U. Bacon among them, were quick to point out, like, you got to get 7 here and go up 10-0, and really put a little bit of panic into Buckeye Nation. But they didn't. They held them to 3, and it's 6-0. The next drive is 11 plays, 69. And there is, on that play, on that series of plays, there is a 3rd and 2, where Julian completes the short pass to Kazmarek. The next two plays are Julian to Bo Jackson for 23, and then the Bo Jackson 36-yard run, where he kind of hesitates and then just shoots down the sideline into the red zone. Now, they didn't get a touchdown, and a lot of folks were saying, got to go for 6 here, got to go for 6 here. But if you go back to what we talked about on Friday, I thought there was so much benefit of just getting points. Get the points in the red area. And they did. And then that, to me, is when everything settled. It was that drive, because next time Michigan goes 3 and out, and then after that you get the 10-play, 63-yard drive, which includes the bomb to Carnell Tate. I believe that's his. Yeah. No, to Jeremiah Smith. The Jeremiah Smith play. We'll get to that in just a second. But that's when I felt pretty good about things, was that drive, the two plays to the freshman. Redshirt freshman quarterback to true freshman running back on the pass, and then Bo Jackson with the hesitation and then shooting down and getting those 3 points, that's when I started to be a little bit at ease.
I think for me it was when Michigan gets the ball on your 32 after Julian's pass is intercepted and they have to settle for a field goal. Mm-hmm. Because that said to me they're not getting the end zone.
Yeah.
And for me that was good enough, because you had Urban Meyer on last week a bunch say that they've got to score 3 touchdowns. Like, they can't score 3 field goals, isn't going to get it done. And it obviously didn't, but they had to get into the end zone, and Michigan just was incapable of doing that. And I liked the idea of kicking it for Ohio State. I just, yeah. The plays, the only play I liked was the 4th down play. And I know it was, I think Claire was offsides on it.
I made the false start on Claire. Perfectly called.
It was awesome. It was open. An awesome play call.
Yeah.
I don't love when Bo gets you down there, you go to Donaldson. I hope this Saturday in the Big Ten championship, if Bo gets you down there, let Bo finish it.
CJ runs a little too high in the red in that short area, I think. I mean, he gets taken out high a lot.
I will say this. I think we saw for the first time this year Bo Jackson get knocked backwards on that play where I think the Michigan defender was coming in, and he was going to go low anyway, but I think he slipped and ended up on his knees, and Bo ran right into him, and he was able to hit. I was like, man, I haven't seen that ever again. Bo Jackson was brilliant in that Saturday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The offensive line was brilliant, and I think they've been brilliant all year, but they were, I don't know if I can remember a game where the Ohio State offensive line played better than they did in that game. And to your guys' point, and it was probably the thing that just made me feel comfortable once they kicked that ball, this defense is just different. We haven't seen a defense like this in a long, long time. I know there were some in the 90s when the Silver Bullets moniker came about for the first time. I know Urban had a few there in his run, but this defense is just so dynamic and different. And we've talked about 8-0-2 all year, as well we should, because they're fantastic. But 98 and 92 have become guys that are right there with them.
97? I mean,
he had a pretty good Saturday.
He sure did. And I think a lot of I thought the two of the pass interference calls were just utter nonsense. I thought the officials had a really tough game. I thought they really struggled. Both sides, I thought it was really poorly officiated. For the life of me, I do not understand people being up in arms on the Jeremiah Smith touchdown. I've asked for clarification. I got rules people talking to me about it. I have no idea what to make of it. Now, I think that people were confusing a catch in the end zone with a fumble out of the end zone. Jeremiah Smith caught the football at the 9-yard line. He then ran. He had it secured, took 3 steps, crosses the goal line, and then it bobbles, but he never loses it. He never fumbled the football. I just don't. I honest to God, I guess I just didn't understand the uproar, or the maybe I didn't understand the rule.
I think Joe Klatt.
Maybe I still don't.
Joe Klatt did a really bad job explaining it as if they were going to overturn the call, and it's like there's not enough there. Even if you go and review it, and you say, does he bobble the ball while he's crossing the goal line? Does his foot go out of bounds? There's an argument to be made there, sure, but there's not enough evidence. Even when they go and take 20 minutes to look at it, and this
but
Big
he
Ten
already caught the ball, Reese.
So that wasn't in
he
dispute.
He caught it. But he took 3 steps. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
He never fumbled it.
And that's why I think, like, Klatt did a bad job making it
they
about
struggled.
That. And so, and the officials not even ejecting a guy for hitting one of their own. Like, this, it's a Big Ten masterclass in ass. And they were just, they were as bad as they've ever been. And they've always been the worst.
I think in that situation, it's one of those things where we have it in life so much now where we can't have any gray area. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those situations where it's a letter of the law versus a spirit of the law type thing. And I think everybody, your whole life, looks at that and that's a touchdown. And that was a touchdown to me. Like, I don't care. I would be saying the same thing if it was a Michigan player. And I know not everybody would be doing that. I know there's some people that would flip to the reverse. I'm one of the few people who still doesn't believe. And everybody tells me I'm wrong. I'm one of the few people that doesn't believe the Marvin Harrison play against Georgia was targeting because the guy hit him in the shoulder first. That was the first point of contact. So I just don't believe that that was targeting. I would feel the same way on this. If that was Michigan, if that was Marsh doing that, I would say that's a touchdown, just like that's a touchdown for Jeremiah. Like, we've all watched football forever. We see that play. We know that's a touchdown.
I was asking for anybody to even show me in the rules where you cannot bobble a ball as you're in the end zone. Like, how long do you have to carry it in there? Like, he already established the catch and then he ran 9 yards. I just didn't understand it. And so the uproar over that, I didn't stand. And I agree with you, Reese. I thought Klatt and even the rules officials had a really tough time. And then it kind of became one of the stories of the day. And it's like, it wouldn't have mattered. They would have scored anyway.
I mean, it's all okay anyway, because you can headbutt roughs now, and no big deal.
Well, that was nuts. I couldn't believe that he wasn't thrown out of that one. I thought that was crazy. I thought they got really lazy with the pass interference stuff down the sidelines. I thought some of those were really lazy. It was like, if the ball hit the ground, it was pass interference, and if not, then it wasn't going to be, and they were trying to throw it from behind. And here's the deal. None of it would have mattered. This was such a dominant display, and I think that they could have thrown it anytime they wanted in the second half, but I don't think it was about that. I think they could have won 41-9 very easy, but I don't think it was about that. I think it was about emasculating them in the fourth quarter, and it's been about the approach that Ryan and this offensive staff has had all day, all season. Why? Because they have the best defense in the country by a wide, wide margin, and he's playing a long game here. Does he want to beat Michigan? With every fiber of his being, he wanted to beat Michigan. You know what else he wants to do? He wants to beat Indiana on Saturday. You know what else he wants to do? He wants immortality. He wants back-to-back national championships. He wants 16-0. I mean, this is heavy stuff. He's not out there trying to muck it up with them and add touchdowns that don't mean anything. They won 27-9. It could have been whatever they wanted it to be. Michigan was cooked. How about Michigan punting in the fourth quarter, down multiple scores? Just conceding it. They just wanted it over, man.
It looked like every Ohio State game this year, honestly.
Yeah.
The Buckeyes could be winning way more than they are, but they don't need to be. So they're not. The two most amazing stats from that game on Saturday to me, Michigan ran 43 plays of offense. That's it. Yeah. Like, the highest Buckeye tackler is 4, because there wasn't that many plays for them to get tackles on. The other, and I don't know if I've ever seen this, Michigan went into half with 108 rushing yards.
Yeah.
They ended the game with 100.
They went backwards in the second half running.
-8 rushing yards in the second half.
It was a masterclass. Yeah, it was just an absolute masterclass. I mean, you have a 12-minute offensive drive. That's kind of what happens. Where you're going to hear from Coach. You're going to hear from some of the participants in this one. Obviously, a lot of emotions were built up heading into this day in Ann Arbor, and the Buckeyes made it oh so sweet. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, here's what's up on a Reaction Monday edition of the program. 27-9 is the final. First downs, Ohio State 22, Michigan 9. Third down efficiency, Ohio State 10 out of 17, Michigan 1 out of 9. Total yards, Buckeyes 419, Wolverines 163. Passing yards, 233 to 63. As Bake mentioned, Michigan had 108 yards rushing in the first half. They finished with 100. This was dominance with a capital D. And Ryan Day orchestrated much of it for his program. This is a long time coming for everybody in Scarlet and Gray. Here is Coach Day on taking the rivalry back.
Well, I'm happy for our players. I'm happy for the coaches, all the fans who were at the game. Man, it was great to see all the fans, stay all the way towards the end and cheer on our team. And here in the OHIO, right here in the stadium, it was a great moment for our players. They deserve it. They've worked hard. I thought they played really well and strong and physical in this game. And happy for our coaches. But again, like I said, the fans even who weren't here, you know, they'll be able to wear that block O and, stand a little prouder. And so that means a lot to me, means a lot to the coaching staff, to the players, and my family. I've thought, as you can imagine, over the years, you know, after winning this game, what I'd say in this press conference, and I'm going to save all those comments because I think the best thing to do is win with humility, and that's what we're going to do, and I think that's it speaks to our program. It speaks to what it means to be a Buckeye, and we wanted to take this rivalry game back this year. And so the way that our guys played certainly spoke to that. And they played with great passion and great physicality. And, I was disappointed that we didn't get in down there and finish a couple of those drives early, or else the scoreboard would have looked even differently than it was. But that's the rivalry game.
Yeah, I thought it was a masterclass in coaching, the way that they handled it offensively and defensively, just completely dominant. When did you guys become aware of what Michigan was doing post-game? With standing on the M and all that?
Honestly, not until there was the overhead camera shot of a staffer with one of their like equipment boxes in the middle. I'm like, oh, those idiots.
Yeah.
Because you don't roll that thing out there for no reason.
Can you imagine that was premeditated? Like, if we lose, guys, we got to protect the M. Hey, guys, if we lose, we got to protect the M.
Which you've already lost.
Exactly.
If you're thinking that way
in the fourth quarter,
who's hatching a plan?
you've already lost. I saw it pretty quickly, and I think it's pretty. I think that's pretty bogus. Like, if you can give it, you should be able to take it, right? And I never thought Ohio State was going to do it anyway, because I thought Ohio State was better than that. And Ohio State kind of proved it in the game, because Michigan tried to goad them after every play.
It's a great point.
The Michigan players were standing over someone or pushing someone or running up and getting someone's face. Like, get out of here with that. Like, to me, that's not what the rivalry is about.
That's what the rivalry's about if it's David Boston and Charles Woodson. Right? That's what it... I mean, that great... This is not... This ain't that. Get the hell out of here with that stuff and that behavior. They are... You think about your whole life from the time you were a little kid. What does people tell you you got to do with a bully? And I don't...
Punch him in the mouth.
You're damn right. Now, Michigan's not even a bully, but they were trying to act like they were. That was the attitude that they tried to act like. They tried to, oh, big tough. Yeah? How about that drive? How about 20 plays, 12 minutes? Right down your throat, and you can't do anything about it.
You don't need to play the flag.
Second down, third ground. You don't need to. Just look at the scoreboard. It speaks for itself. That's it. I can't imagine how cathartic it was for them. And I understand, like, guys on this team, like, wanting to go to midfield with the Ohio against the world flag. Like, I get it. But I just thought Coach Day just going to Schroen and just saying, hey, man, you got to get your team out of here. We're not planting a flag, I promise. Like, get them out. We don't need a fight here. We got bigger things to play for. They didn't have anything else to play for last year, guys. You got to remember that. They had nothing to play for. Their season was done.
That was Cooked. Their season last year.
That was
year.
Their season. That was their season. Around here, you have eyes on bigger things. And they did it. And they haven't lost since that. I thought one of the other things that was really critical, because it would be easy to panic after the slow start. The interception on the second throw, and being down 6-0. I was like you guys. I thought once they held them to a field goal inside the short area there and kept it from 10-0, it felt very good about where things were going to go. But I also think that Ohio State felt like this was always a matchup. Even if 7 would have happened, they would have been okay, just because I think they believed in their plan. Here was Ryan Day on the idea of not panicking after the slow start.
Yeah. It wasn't a panic. Yeah, when I saw the first run hit, I said, you got to be kidding me right now. Like, this is not what I expected at all. And then we throw the pick, and he comes off and thought it was cover one, and it was cover two. And I'm like, geez, okay, that's not what we wanted for a start. But I never felt panicked. I felt like, all right, we're going to rally back on this thing. And, man, the defense stepped up in a big way, you know, and forced field goals in those spots. And those are all four-point plays. And, you know, when you can hold guys to 3 points early in the game, and then, you know, you get it turned, and then we had that big drive, and, you know, we just keep battling, and then you score. Now, again, we get down on there on the 1 yard line and don't get in. I mean, that was frustrating. And so you kind of going back and forth, but again, there was no panic on our side. And again, I think the communication and the chemistry between the players and the coaches is very good right now, because when there's confusion, that's when there can be infighting and all of a sudden guys start to act a certain way. It didn't happen at all. And so we had a lot of confidence coming into it. And even after a slow start, we felt good.
Yeah, I will say this. Excuse me, 7 plays inside the 5 and really inside the 3 and not getting a score. They still have that to sort out. I don't know if any team will make them actually pay for it. You watch college football this weekend. I didn't see anybody out there that was on the level of this Buckeye team. They got to go handle their business, but they are a special group and the prohibitive favorite. Here's Caleb Downs, who experienced a victory over Michigan and the gold pants that are going to come with it, on the feeling of finally getting that win against UM.
It's a great opportunity for the team, because there's more to do in the future, but it's great to lift the weight off of some people's shoulders that they've had here for a minute. So I feel like it's a blessing for our team, and we just got to keep pushing.
Yeah, this is Caden Curry post game for the win for Coach Day in the program.
Special, man. It'll be a moment I always remember. And just seeing the smile on Coach Day's face, I mean, this game was really for him, too, because we know what he's gone through, and just us players gone through, and it just feels good to get one back.
What does Coach Day mean to you and mean to this team?
I mean, he's changed really my whole life, and just my perspective of how I go about things, and he's definitely something I die for out in that field, and he's someone I respect really much.
What has he done to change your life in those ways?
Just the way I am outside of football, the way I am mentally, and just the man I am today. I mean, it's just so many things that I can't really get detailed in one little thing.
There's so many moments that jump into your head as you're sitting here talking about it, but the Carnell Tate after the deep ball, Julian just put it on the string like the snow is flowing. This is a kid from Southern California. He's never played a game in this. Never. Never. You wouldn't have known. Didn't affect him a bit, but he threw it right on the screws to Carnell. Go ahead, Bake.
The throw to Carnell and the throw to Jeremiah on both of those long touchdowns couldn't have been any better. And oh my gosh, the route Jeremiah ran. I'm like, nobody talks about the route because, oh, did he score or not? He was juggling the football. He put that Michigan defender on skates.
They also did it on fourth and 5.
I was just going to say, Reese, 4th and 5, man. That is a 4th and 5 throw, putting it in there. The route is perfect, and he put it right in there. I mean, on 4th and 5, the the Carnell Tate pose after his touchdown, and then they photoshopped the gold pants on him. I mean, I'm sure there's a billion shirt companies that have put that on shirts in the last 24, 48 hours, but holy smokes, was that great. Then you get Brutus doing Script Ohio and crossing out the M. I think Ari Wasserman, our buddy, was the first one to notice it because he recorded it, like recorded him doing the Script Ohio and he crossed out the M. And I was like, everything was perfect about all of that.
It when you see that route that Jeremiah ran there, and yeah. I understand it's 35-yard line. There's a lot more room on the field. But when you see that route and what he can do to guys, it amazes you that they have any trouble in the red zone. Because
they tried throwing that. I know it. They tried throwing the fade to him, and then Julian was a little high on that one, which is hard to do against Jeremiah. I do think that there's probably going to be, if you're looking for warts, and it's hard to find them with this team when the average score is 37-7 and they haven't really had a fourth quarter game since the Texas game. But if you're looking for them, it is probably still remains that short red zone stuff. Like, what exactly do we do down there to get success? Now, they did sneak it with Julian on some third and shorts later once you got into the game, but they were unable to do so down in there. So that's something you got to work on. But it ain't much when you have a rivalry win as dominant as this one does. And it does propel you now into, I had a buddy of mine text me, now the real season begins. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, when is it? Like, holy hell. Now we got a Big Ten championship game, seeding, where they're going to be. We'll try to make sense of what's next. We've already had a Big Ten teleconference. The cigarette man has spoken. Coach Day has spoken. We got a matchup on Saturday. Of course, we'll have you covered all week. But dip our toe in those waters and what's next coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
A lot of hosts have been on our airways in the past 30 years. Some good, some bad, some really bad. Anyway, sorry for that. The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your new Columbus home for the Jim Rome Show is The Fan 2.
Catch the live experience weekdays from 3 to 6.
Just one requirement, have a take and don't suck. The Fan 2, Columbus's home of the Jim Rome Show.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Look, this is going to be a theme throughout the week, and you're going to hear from Ryan Day. You're going to hear from Kurt Cignetti. There's Heisman. Feels like winner here wins the Heisman. I mean, there's a lot going into this one on Saturday. But I think if you hooked anybody up to a lie detector test that has to play this weekend, they'd all say, yeah, we're good. You think Kirby wants to play Bama again? You think Kalen DeBoer wants to play Georgia again? I mean, for Ohio State, it's a little different. They haven't won the Big Ten in a little bit of while. But this is, and we'll get to it coming up at 10 o'clock, just how screwed up all of these things are and the way that this calendar is all set up. The big thing for Ohio State, I think, is avoiding any sort of emotional letdown that would come from the win against Michigan. Ryan Day was asked about that. Yeah, we've already had a Big Ten teleconference. It was yesterday. Here is Ryan Day on avoiding the emotional letdown.
Well, I think it starts with a mindset going into the season on what your goals are. Our goals, for this year was, win the first one, win the rivalry game, win the Big Ten championship, win the national championship. And I think when you look at it from that lens, you realize that, it's a long road and that you have to really focus on your routine. You have to, come up for air on Sundays and figure out, what needs to get changed and, sort of recalibrate and then, go about your routine of reloading for that week. And so that's, sort of going to be the same way here. We have an expectation that we want to reach our goals. When you have that approach, I think it's important where I've been on teams before where looking to make it to the playoffs or you're happy to make a bowl game, then maybe, you take your foot off the accelerator because you don't look at it from that lens. you know, we do. And so I think that matters. I think our guys have that approach and going through it last year and understanding that this thing's going all the way to the middle end of January is the way you have to look at it. But knowing that, you know, you lose one game, you know, your season's over. So I think just that mindset is important.
Can you imagine any other coach in college football in recent years saying, win the first one, win the rivalry game, win the league, win the national championship out loud? Like the audacity for that? I mean, I don't even remember Saban doing that. I know that that was their goal every year, was to go win the national title and beat, win the Iron Bowl, win the SEC. But I don't remember hearing him say it the way that they've said it here, the way that they've owned it here, that that is going to be the objective. Is to handle all of those things. Beat Texas, beat Michigan, win the Big Ten, win the national title. They're halfway home. Standing in the way is an Indiana team that hasn't really been tested at all. And they passed the biggest test they have. They have full respect. They went to Oregon. They whipped the Ducks. Here's Kirk Cignetti, who has done one of the most remarkable program-building jobs anyone has ever seen in such short time on this matchup against Ohio State.
They're a great football team. Obviously, won national championship last season. I've won multiple national championships. Ryan Day's a great coach. You know, he'll be one of the legends of the game someday. They're dominant, really, everywhere. A lot of great players. Very explosive on offense. Got the number one rated defense in America. Special teams are really good. You know, new coordinator, obviously, Matt Patricia. So they're, you know, they're a little different than they were last year. But, you know, they're giving up the fewest amount of points in the country. People are rushing for about 70 yards on them. They're only giving up 200 yards a game. They're giving up 130 yards passing. Number one red area defense in the country. Really good on third down, fourth down. Multiple looks. A lot of really good players. Put them in position to make plays. And, you know, the thing about Ohio State, you know, they play fast. They play physical, nasty with an edge. And they really haven't been challenged this year. I mean, the Texas game was 14-0, and Texas scored 3 minutes ago in the game. You know, Michigan did have some success early, and then Ohio State took control of the game. And, you know, I think other than the Texas game, 18 points is the closest point differential in all their games.
That's right. That's right. All of those things are correct. And when you hear it from another coach, it even rings even, I think it even resonates even more. This is such a weird thing. Now, I think it helps that Ohio State hasn't won over there since 2020. I do think that that helps. And it is a stated goal. And Reese, if you go back to the conversations you and I had in July when we were out there for camp and we said beat Michigan, win the Big Ten. Like the national stuff, now we're greedy, right? So now we're, you know, now we want all of it. But really the goals for this season were to beat Michigan and win the Big Ten. They did the first part. Now they'll try to do the second part against an Indiana team that's going to be very game. But I think win or lose, guys, I think both teams in this are not playing until January 1st or December 31st. I don't think winner or loser here. And I think the same is absolutely true of Indiana, even if it got lopsided somehow. Indiana is going to be one of the top four seeds in this tournament.
Yeah,
both these teams are.
I do think with what Texas did to A&M, it feels like a damn week ago.
Yeah,
that likely allows the loser of the Big Ten championship a bye. And
winner's the one, loser's the four. Right?
I think that's how this goes.
Yeah.
Because I also start to wonder, like, do five SEC teams really deserve a shot at this thing? You'll also have a lot to do, you know, if BYU's able to get their loss back against Texas Tech, like. What happened this past weekend was a lot of fun, and I think it sets up for more fun and a lot of conversation with championship weekend. But it was always beat Michigan, because you knew, as you've known for really 20 years, you beat Michigan, you're playing it for a Big Ten. Or as long as the Big Ten championship's been a thing, you beat Michigan, you're playing in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was always easy to kind of say, yeah, just beat Michigan, at least outwardly. Because the Big Ten championship was, yeah, you'll get there. You just got to get through that game in Ann Arbor first. And it'll be, I think, an incredible thing this week when you talk to coaches and players prepping for this Indiana team for this Big Ten championship game, because you have to beat them on the field. Michigan, you had to beat in the field and you had to beat in your head. I don't think Indiana's in anybody's head. Like, this is a game you can look down to X's and O's, and you can look at with production versus, you know, how good Indiana is. they're better than Michigan, but last week you just couldn't shake Michigan because the Wolverines were in your head.
I know it's the world we live in, and they had the Big Ten Coaches Championship press conference yesterday, and
yeah,
it's always on to the next thing. I really don't want to talk about Indiana yet, quite frankly. No. And I know we have to, right?
But they probably don't want to either, Bake. But that's the product of where we are. Like, you want to revel in this.
Exactly.
And they, that's their challenge, too,
and,
is
and they don't have that. The luxury, too, right?
No, they're on. I mean, like, just, he had the teleconference yesterday.
We can a little. And it was funny. Ryan was late to that. He's like, well, we had a team meeting. Like, we just got done with the team meeting. We've got to we've got to worry about that stuff first and foremost. The line to the Big Ten Championship came out, and it was 5.5. Mm-hmm. Ohio State favored. And I got to be honest, and this is not I try not to talk through scarlet-colored glasses ever.
Yeah.
That's not enough. Because I saw Indiana play Penn State, and I saw Penn State physically handle Indiana up front. Mm-hmm. Now, Indiana did a great job of fighting back and winning that game on the at the end, and give them credit for that. But if the Ohio State team that was on that field, that offensive line, that defensive line, shows up Saturday in Indianapolis,
mm-hmm.
they're beating Indiana by 2 scores, minimum.
Yeah, I think... And like you said, we'll have all week to talk about the matchups of the game and so forth and so on. The thing that I keep coming back to is 4-17 looked really good to go to me. And that was in snow and cold. There will be no snow Saturday in Indy. There won't be any. It's climate controlled. So there's going to be an opportunity to let the football Ferrari really breathe. And my hunch is they do, but we'll have all week to talk about it. But this is the world that we live in college football, where none of it makes sense. And speaking of things not making sense, I was jealous of the Lane Kiffin stuff over the weekend. I would have loved that in the Big Ten. I would have loved it in the Big Ten. We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Catch the latest from the world of Ohio State athletics. Weeknights at 6 on The Buckeye Show. News, special guests, and everything scarlet and gray. The Fan.
Hey, it's Austin Ward.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Casting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit lindsayhonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser, number one Ohio State heads to Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship game. Buckeyes are 12-0 and will play 12-0 Indiana Saturday night at 8 o'clock. OSU's a 5.5-point favorite in this one. Head coach Ryan Day will join a special Tuesday edition of Buckeye Roundtable tomorrow night at 6:35. In other college football news, LSU will introduce Lane Kiffin as their next head coach Monday afternoon. Michigan State fired Jonathan Smith on Sunday and will reportedly hire former Northwestern head coach Pat Fitzgerald. In college hoops, Ohio State is off until Saturday. The 6-1 Buckeyes will dip into conference play at Northwestern at 2 o'clock. Hear from OSU's head coach at noon today on the Jake Diebler Radio Show. This update is sponsored by Roosters. For every $50 you spend in Roosters gift cards this holiday season, you'll receive a $10 Roosters bonus buck back. Get them at Roosters locations or online at roosterswings.com.
Bo knows many people.
He talks to the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Can you imagine if Friday word got out that Penn State was going to hire Kurt Cignetti to be the head coach at Penn State? And then he wins the game against Purdue. And then he spends all day Saturday trying to convince leadership at Indiana that he should coach his team through the Big Ten championship game against Ohio State and a potential national championship, but that he's going to go to Penn State afterwards. Can you imagine how much we'd love that up here to talk about it? You don't want to know why Paul Feinbaum's show works? Because of this. Because of this. I mean, Ole Miss and LSU are rivals. Those two are rivals. Okay? They go back a long time, and they are rivals. And the Ole Miss program in recent years has been better than the LSU program. But historically, LSU has been better. LSU's won three national titles, it goes without saying. Lane Kiffin left Ole Miss, a surefire college football playoff team, to go to a rival while his team is still in the middle of playing for ultimate goals. And then we had national people saying that Ole Miss ought to let him coach. Are you kidding? Are you nuts? About the no, get out. Kindly leave. Kindly leave. And this isn't all, I'm not going to come up here and crush Kiffin either, because I understand the ask. I'm sure he wanted to finish what he was started. I'm sure he does love some of the players on that team. I'm sure he's very proud of what they built there in 6 years. But a better job came open, and he wanted to take it. 7 years, $91 million, $13 million guaranteed. If he wins a national title, he automatically becomes the highest paid coach in college football. That's the deal they just got. By the way, don't ever cry about money for me. Stop it. Big time college sports. Don't stop it. Everyone's got money for buyouts. Everyone's got money for these contracts. Unless you're Florida State and you can't afford to do anything, the rest of you places out here, everybody's got money, and they got a ton of it. This, of course, is a product of the calendar, which we've talked about 1,000 times. And the reason that LSU had to make this move right now, the reason that Lane Kiffin had to make this decision right now, is because there's a national signing day that's coming up, and there's a portal that opens. And he's got to build his roster. Is his roster going to contain a bunch of guys who are probably still at Ole Miss? My guess is, yeah. That will inevitably happen. That once that team is eliminated, some of the players that he really likes will probably matriculate to Baton Rouge. But he's got to build it. And it's not LSU's fault. It's not his fault. It's the calendar's fault. And that one is on the NCAA. They can fix that in one fell swoop. New calendar. National signing day goes back to February. No more early enrollees. The portal is open in January after everybody's been eliminated, moved the season back. We've been over it 1,000 times. There's easy fixes for this. They could do it in one meeting at a JW Marriott over a white tablecloth dinner. It's really easy to do. You don't need to have a bunch of groupthink. You don't need consultants. Just fix it, because that's what led to this. Now, you can question if Kiffin should have taken it, but you don't, unless you're in his shoes, how can you judge? The only thing that I think he was guilty of was trying to have his cake and eat it too. I understand the ask, but I also understand Ole Miss saying, "Now we're good. We'll see on down the road." Now, they kept and elevated his defensive coordinator, Pete Golding. He's now the head coach at Ole Miss. So that happened. It was busy, to say the least. Our guy, Alex Golish, is now the head coach at Auburn. Dublin Scioto kid, Westerville Central assistant, is now the head coach at Auburn. He's going to coach in an Iron Bowl next year. So those two jobs are done. This morning, we get officially that Kentucky is moving off of Mark Stoops. So that job is now open. Maybe one of the biggest surprises, Michigan State fired Jonathan Smith with a buyout in the $30 million. And I really liked that hire. I thought he was a good coach at Oregon State, but it really went off a cliff. But then who do they replace him with? Pat Fitzgerald. Okay.
That's what it, I mean, they had to pay, well, they're, I guess they don't have to pay Mel Tucker
because
they did it with cause. But that would have been a ton of money in coaches' buyouts.
They got Gilbert and Ishbia, though. So they have two multiple billionaires that they can lean on whenever they need an extra $50 million.
And I do wonder, because Pat Fitzgerald, they settled with Northwestern. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what the deal is immediately. Maybe he's got a lot of elevators in his contract that you don't have to pay right up front, but they could be competitive pretty quickly.
It's a great hire. And I think it's kind of a perfect spot for him and a perfect spot for Michigan State. And I think one of the things that we're seeing here, and we've seen it now the last couple of years since NIL has been in full effect, is that the Northern money is really flexing. I mean, it goes back to that old Shelby Foote analogy I used of the South never had a chance to win that war, when you're talking about a manufacturing economy being better than an agricultural economy. There's just more money up here, except for the oil schools. There just is. And so my hunch is, if Michigan State wants to be really good at football really quick, they get Ishbia and Gilbert into some sort of a pissing contest about who can donate the most money to the football team, and they could put $100 million towards football tomorrow in Michigan State. Now, all quiet on the Eastern Front.
Why is that?
I don't know.
There was all
not
of this.
Not a peep, Reese.
All of this action yesterday, and Penn State's just, it's crickets.
There's not even a rumor mill.
The only rumor you've heard, and that just came out recently, I think, in the last week, and I don't even know if it's a rumor, but you've heard Kalen DeBoer's name. And that's
it.
I
know it. And that makes some sense. I'm like, I could see, like, would DeBoer be like, man, I don't need this. Like, have you looked at Bama, what they did the last 2 months, who they've played, who they beat, and they're not great. They're not. They can't run it. They got big problems with Ryan Williams, who's really doesn't even, he was hardly in the Iron Bowl in the second half of the game. They don't throw to him anything compared to what he was a year ago. So that the Alabama, I did see that with Kalen DeBoer. And so I could see him say, man, I need some sanity. I can't follow this Saban stuff. Like, if I don't make the playoff, win the national title, then I'm on the hot seat. He's, this is nuts. So I could see him doing that. But the only thing that I kept coming back to on that is, if there was any chance of that, I think that coaching circle world is so small. Wouldn't word have gotten to Kiffin? Because I think he would have rather had Bama than LSU.
Maybe you just can't wait and take that risk. What if it falls through and then you run out of the chairs in the musical chairs game?
That's what I kind of thought, like, all day Sunday as this is going on, and even Saturday, because Kiffin was supposed to meet with the athletic director on Saturday, and they were supposed to have meetings, and everything kept getting pushed. Mm-hmm. I was like, if Kiffin wants to do this the right way, you stick it out with Ole Miss through the college football playoff, and then something's going to be open, maybe not as big as LSU, but with LSU, it's like, you saw what just happened with Brian Kelly, and you want to jump into that?
He did the opposite of what Luke Fickell did.
Yeah.
Luke Fickell stayed at Cincinnati. He could have had any job. Hell, he could have had the LSU job. Could have probably had the USC job. Could have had the Oklahoma job. I think all of those were open in that same hiring window. And Luke could have had any of them, but he wanted to coach his damn fine football team in Cincinnati in the college football playoff, and so he did. And they got bombed by Georgia, and then he stuck around. And so then that musical chairs analogy came to fruition. And now all of a sudden the best job he could get is Wisconsin, and now look where he is at Wisconsin. I just think that there is no clean way to do this. I think the only thing Lane Kiffin is guilty of is trying to have his cake and eat it too. And again, I don't mind him asking. I understand, like, hey, can I do this? I'll give you assurances. I won't take anybody off the, who knows what was said behind closed doors. But I also understand the athletic director at Ole Miss, Keith Carter, going, no, we're good, man. Like, would you trust Lane Kiffin?
No.
Probably not as far as you could throw him. So, like, if you're the athletic director, Keith Carter, I understand saying, yeah, we're good. I appreciate your word, but it's not worth much to me right now. I understand that side of it.
And it's the Fickell situation and all of this why I don't blame Lane Kiffin for anything. Because Fickell could have been Notre Dame's head coach. He could have been possibly LSU's head coach. And then he ended up at Wisconsin. And, it hasn't worked out. Who knows if it would have worked out for him at Notre Dame or if it would have worked out at LSU. But that's why I don't blame Lane in any of this, because of what happened with Luke.
Yeah, and it's just stupefying to me. And I take cover for the NCAA on some things, because much of what's happened to this sport is not on their watch. It's university presidents, and it's the power conferences, and it's the television networks who've created it. But the calendar, they can flip right now. You could fix it right now, and it's done. It's done. It's not that hard. And they didn't. They didn't. They sit here and watch and allow this stuff to happen, and you're going to have, I mean, I'm telling you, there's going to be mass exodus. We haven't seen it yet, but there could be mass exodus of players on playoff teams in the portal. Like, it's just a mess, and they can fix it so easily. But that was nuts. The idea that you think about the Egg Bowl, I consumed all of it. The Egg Bowl stuff into going out and going nose to nose with a reporter with the housewife comment to Marty Smith being there for, what, 48 hours, 72 hours encamped in Oxford? Like, what a scene, man. What an absolute scene. And all quiet at Penn State. Not a whisper. What are they up to? Because over there, people are confident they have their man. They just haven't said who it is yet. So who knows what is going on over there? Who knows what's going on trying to pick a 12-team playoff? Imagine the show we're doing a week from now, guys. It was chaos. And I don't know what's going to happen in the ACC. I don't know what they're going to do with Miami versus Notre Dame. We're going to get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
Winners of the prestigious Platinum Microphone Award every year, given to the best radio station in the world. No need to look it up. It's real. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's Team.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Ryan Day's Buckeyes head to Indy for a Big Ten title matchup against the Indiana Hoosiers.
Live fan coverage starts Saturday at 2:30 with the Kick at 8.
Turn down the TV and turn us up. The home of the Buckeyes, the Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's T-Bone.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A partly sunny and cold start to December today. We'll see temperatures only in the upper 30s. And then for tonight, lows drop into the 20s. With snow developing overnight, could have some heavy bands possible. When all is said and done, we are looking at several inches into the Tuesday morning commute, which could make it messy, so plan ahead. We do start to dry out and the snow tapers off by the second half of the day on Tuesday. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
1, 2, 3. Football season is weird because we actually look forward to Mondays. It's Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
And as always, and proudly, we are sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for over 78 years. What a mess. What a mess. This will be the first college football playoff selection show that I'll be pretty locked into. The others have come and gone, and there's not been much for news. I was interested in the first one. I'm very interested in the one on Tuesday because of the word entrapment. And how do they handle conference champions who lose? And at the center of this is Alabama. Alabama has two losses. They play Georgia now in the SEC title game. Texas A&M lost, of course, to Texas. By the way, what does that say about A&M that with a single loss to Texas, they're all the way out, like all the tiebreakers out? By the way, this speaks to the problem in this sport where because these conferences have gotten so big, there aren't enough common opponents. The ACC is going to have to deal with that, and we'll get into that momentarily. But what do they say about Alabama? Because that Alabama team that I watched in the Iron Bowl, by the way, a straight stones call by Kalen DeBoer on fourth down in a tie game going for the touchdown in their own territory. Incredible call to do that. But is that, I don't think that Alabama team is going to beat Georgia twice in 1 year. So now what do you do with them? Do you punish them for having to play Georgia for a second time? Last year, Ward Manuel walked into it and he said, we won't. Will whoever, now we don't even have the guy, the Baylor guy's gone. I don't even know who's running this thing now. Is that guy who speaks on Tuesday, what will his words say about what they're going to make of conference championship weekend? Because to me, that's a fascinating one. Well, that's the center of all of this is Bama.
And that guy who speaks on Tuesday, his school's in the SEC. So it'll be interesting to see if that skews him at all.
Who's doing it now?
It's Hunter Yurecek, the Arkansas AD.
What do they do with them? Because I think Georgia's going to beat them. And Georgia's no super team. Georgia's not great. They can't throw it. They had three freshmen playing in the game against Georgia Tech on the offensive line. Georgia is not special in any way. Neither of these teams are. But it is the Southeastern Conference, and what are you going to do with the loser if it's Alabama?
I think that's always been the nightmare scenario for this committee, and it was never Texas. Some people thought it was Texas. It was never Texas. It was Alabama losing to Georgia in an SEC championship when they've already beaten Georgia once. That was the nightmare scenario for this committee. And then, of course, Duke winning the ACC, which I love. I hope it happens.
Yeah, to the SEC, I certainly think that they're going to learn, having learned from last year's mistake, not try to step in it. And take every single championship game as their own unique circumstance and say we will have to look at those the next day or the evening into the next day. Because there's also the Ole Miss idea that they don't have their head coach. And is there going to be anything done with the Rebels because Lane Kiffin's not there? Probably there shouldn't be, but
I don't think there will be.
That could be a question. That's probably one of several questions that Yurchek probably faces first in regards to the Southeastern Conference. Because, yeah, they got, I think, a bigger mess when it comes to the ACC and what to do if a 7-5 conference champion in Duke, I guess it would be an 8-5 conference champion Duke, gets into the college football playoff. And as we've been saying since the jump, that's the only bid from the ACC.
Well, they should be the champ.
But they may not get in.
They may not.
No, they might not. No, they aren't guaranteed in. If Duke beats Virginia and like James Madison or the winner of the North Texas Tulane game is ranked ahead of Duke, they wouldn't get in. You only have to take the five conference champs, the highest ranked five conference champs.
And I talked about this last week on the fans YouTube CFP reaction show.
Yeah.
What if this happens and Duke wins the ACC, but they're not high enough? So like a James Madison and a Tulane are conference championships that are higher, champions that are higher, and they get in. Will the committee then bump Miami over Notre Dame to put an ACC team in?
Well, the games have to matter. They played. I mean, I think Notre Dame's better, but they did play. And the game, it was week one. But the games have to matter. I mean, they have to. So I think that argument stake, and that's why I think Vanderbilt, I see no scenario how Vanderbilt can get in, despite all the lobbying. I see no scenario. They got beaten by Alabama 30-14. Texas beat them. They made it look closer than it was, but I don't see any scenario how Vanderbilt could get in over Texas. You're going to punish Texas because they played Ohio State? And I'm not arguing for Texas. Texas is out. I kind of think that the SEC 5 is locked in. I almost think unless Alabama gets bombed by Georgia, which I don't think they will, that Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma are in, and the rest are out. Now, if you're Texas, you can look at Oklahoma and go, wait a sec, we beat them. We're both 6-2 in the league. Now, Oklahoma won their non-conference game against Michigan. Texas did not. They lost to Ohio State. I think we could say that those two metrics aren't the same. So that's a Texas beef, but that's their problem.
And I think that
there's five of them that are getting in.
I think the committee has an easy argument there. Their quarterback wasn't healthy. I think that's an easy argument for the committee, so I don't think they're too worried about that. The Alabama one will be fascinating, though.
I just don't see how you can leave them out. I don't think that they will. I don't think that they will. The three Big Tens are locks. I think Oregon now is in a sweet spot. Oregon could get all the way up. Either the 5 or the 6 is essentially a bye. If you're the 5, you get to play Tulane or somebody like that. If you're the 6, you're going to get to play Virginia potentially. Like, Virginia is going to be in this thing. And apparently the ACC had the ability, if they wanted to, with Miami. I thought I read this over the weekend that Miami got left out over Duke because of the winning percentage of the common opponent. And my beloved Ponies could have fixed all of this, so they just won at Cal. And I thought maybe they're going to rally. They got behind, and then they couldn't rally all the way. But I was watching that one in the Iron Bowl. I'm up until NBC and I were up till 12:45 watching those games on Saturday night between all of those things. I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. All of it. But that's kind of where it's at. So to me, it feels like three Big Tens. I tell you, the other fly in the ointment for the Alabama would be if BYU beats Texas Tech. I don't think they will. But if they do,
they're both in.
Yep.
They're both in because the BYU would be in as the Big 12 champ and Texas Tech is in. So in that scenario, an Alabama loss, I think, would send them out. The question then would be, which other SEC, if Bama wins, then what other SEC team are you also sending out? And then what do you do with Notre Dame?
Yeah, it's interesting. The last 2 weeks, the committee has had that golden bracket around Miami, mm-hmm. which has labeled them, you must win the conference championship to get in. And then now what do you do? I mean, what will you do tomorrow night? And then how will you address it, especially on Sunday?
With Miami, they do have the argument of more data points. Like, they beat Pitt. And wasn't Pitt ranked last weekend in this thing?
When they played Miami, 22. They were ranked, yeah.
Yeah, they were 22. So there's another ranked win for Miami. It's stupefying that they lost at home to Louisville. It's still crazy.
I really think that the committee will, if it's a situation where the ACC champion is not rated high enough.
So if it's
to
Duke,
be one of those, yes,
it would only be if it's Duke.
I really believe they're going to put Miami in over Notre Dame. I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent. I just feel that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and look, it might be if that happens. I mean, last year they left Bama out. If this year they leave Notre Dame out, is that something that finally forces Notre Dame's hand to just say, hey, man, we got to get in the league? Because if Notre Dame doesn't get in, and no one's going to cry tears for them, they lost at Miami in week one, 27-24. They lost at home to Texas A&M, 41-40. But the problem is it's the rest of their schedule. Purdue, Arkansas, Boise State, NC State, USC, Boston College. They finished Boston College, Navy, Pitt, Syracuse, Stanford. That's where it's like, well, that's tough. They need it. If they were in a conference, even if they were in the ACC full, they could play. They'd be playing in the ACC title game. And they've done that before. They did that in COVID. Like, they could have done that. If they were in the ACC full, they'd be in a play-in game against Virginia. It'd be them against Virginia for the ACC title. And instead, now they could be on the outside looking in. And I think all of those things are at play. By the way, and this, I think, perfectly sums up college football where we're at. The American Conference Championship game is Friday night. It is North Texas and Tulane. My hunch is the winner of that is in. I think they'll be the 12 seed in this thing. Tulane is going to be coached by a guy who just signed to be the new head coach at Florida, Sumrall. And then North Texas, their head coach is going to be the new head coach at Oklahoma State. And they're both going to coach in the game.
What a time to be alive.
College football in 2025. Austin in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. They've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And Guest Hotline is sponsored by Accurate Heating and Cooling and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
He knows everything about the Buckeyes. He's been offered tens of dollars by a certain team to spill his secrets. He's told that certain team to go to hell.
Damn you all to hell!
He's Austin Ward.
Sponsored by High Bank Distillery, your destination for handcrafted cocktails, locally inspired dishes, and award-winning whiskey war. Learn more at highbankco.com.
A little different than the conversation we had a year ago on this Monday, huh, buddy?
how 365 days can change things.
What was the vibe on the field pregame?
I think Ohio State was incredibly confident. I think that they expected to happen what did wind up happening. And I think that that's been different from the last couple of years. And one thing that, you know, you and I got into a little bit last Monday was Ryan Day's emphasis on keeping the routine the same and treating all the practices the same, having the same media availability. And I really believe that the way that he carried himself, and there was no guarantee that it was going to happen, but I thought it positioned Ohio State to be more successful, to not, you know, they were going to be emotional. There was going to be more physicality in this game. There was going to be more intensity. There was hardware on the line. They were aware of the stakes of the game, but they didn't make it throughout the build-up to the game, including when they arrived. It was about 10:15 when the buses pulled up outside the big house, and, you know, they looked serious. They looked like they were ready to go to war. Philip Daniels, I thought, looked like he might murder somebody when he got off the bus. But outside of that, like, there was a confidence, and I didn't see it initially. The final walkout of the tunnel, they showed it on the broadcast, and Byrne got a fantastic photo of Ryan Day smirking at the Michigan fans that were throwing things at him, hurling insults. And I think you just knew as soon as that ball kicked off, even when things got wonky in the middle of the first quarter or right away on the first play from scrimmage for the Wolverines, that Ohio State was not rattled because they were not uptight. They were confident. They knew that they had prepared the way they had done for every other game, and that eventually that was going to pay off for them, and it did. So I think that approach last week by Ryan Day was a masterclass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hasn't lost since that game. The average score in the playoff was 36-18. The average score this year is 37-7. Like, not only are they beating everybody, they're beating the brakes off of everybody they played. Like, he got punched in the mouth. He got up, and he got up emboldened. And I think that's what you saw. Now it's nervy. You mentioned, I mean, Julian throws an interception. He thinks it's cover one. It's cover two. Throws a pick on the second throw. I did like the approach. Let's get Carnell and Jeremiah going right away, but he throws a pick. But then to get to hold them to a field goal, and then the subsequent drive where you get the third down throw to Kazmarek, the 20-some yard throw and catch to Bo, and then Bo's 36-yard kind of hezzy go, and then you get the three. And I know a lot of people were saying, oh, get seven. I'm like, no, just in this game, I think points are going to be at a premium for Michigan. Like, just get any points or positive. I really supported that kicking that field goal on that one. That to me is when it just settled. Like, and then at that point, then you could just go. But that's when it really settled for me, buddy.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest difference right now is even though Ohio State had the best defense in the country a year ago, that they rode that to the national championship combined with the explosiveness of that offense. This year's team is different. The confidence that Ryan Day has in Matt Patricia and the Silver Bullets is what changes the whole dynamic, whether you need to kick a field goal instead of go for the touchdown in that scenario, whether that is declining a holding penalty to put somebody in third and six. The confidence in that defense is off the charts, and that's 100% correct for you. That's what settled things down. It's also why there wasn't panic, because Ohio State was going to adjust to what Michigan was doing with its ground game. It knew how limited Bryce Underwood was going to be throwing the football against Ohio State. And when the weather got even worse, that became a much bigger problem for the Wolverines than it did for Ohio State, because it still had confidence in Julian Sain to throw the football with that cast of characters. It was running the football at a level that it was building towards all season long. That came to fruition. But everything comes back to this being a historically great defense and the confidence that gives everybody in the program for there. You can't even single one out. Every single player that got out there that had a Buckeye leaf on their helmet that was playing on defense, and they leaned on the starters to get through this game. This was not a rotation. This was, you know, how would they handle that, you know, the load management. That was all hands on deck, whatever it takes to win the game. And that front line Ohio State defense is as good as I've ever seen.
It is. It's historically good when you talk about giving up an average of 7 points at this point in the season, 130 yards passing, like 70 yards on the ground. You have incredible players, and the front was unbelievable in this one. And then you have these first, it helps when you have like three guys are going to be picked in the top 15 of the NFL draft. So the talent is absurd, but also with 2-0-8, the acumen is off the charts. Like, they can do everything, and it really, that's the thing I kept coming back to is I just can't see a true freshman getting multiple touchdowns against that defense with what Patricia cooked up, and it really was. It was crazy. The quarterback from Michigan really struggled in the cold, and the quarterback from Southern California really didn't at all.
No, and when Julian came out in short sleeves, that was another thing like Ryan Day smirk. It's like, okay, you guys don't think he's tough enough. You think he's going to be phased by this next challenge. He's not. And in fact, he's going to lean into it as hard as he possibly can. So he has been phenomenal. And then he again had to, just similar to what we talked about with Ryan Day getting off the mat a year ago, Julian Sain had to do that in real time after that second throw. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there was not going to be any wavering of confidence in him. It is okay to make mistakes. Ryan Day says that a lot. You're going to, rise or drop to the level of your training. But, you know, Julian made all the throws that he had to. And, you know, we can spread the credit around. You have to. When you win by 18 points in the Big House and you end that streak, everyone has to meet that moment. But Julian did the things he needed to do. Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith, I think the training staff deserves a lot of credit for that. But ultimately, if we're talking about the success of this offense and a really good Michigan rush defense overall, the offensive line, that was the best game that they've played cohesively, collectively in a very long time. And I've been critical on a lot of Mondays of Tegra Shibola and rotation at right guard. Mm-hmm. All five of those guys were utterly dominant. They didn't give up a sack, and Ohio State ran the football the way that it has to do that in November, in the snow, on the road to win the game. So it shouldn't be overlooked just because we didn't have to call out any of their individual names. That's what you want from an offensive line. That group of five up front, I mean, phenomenal. And Tegra played all 73 of those offensive snaps. He deserves as much credit as I could possibly give him.
Did you get a straight answer from anybody who actually knows what they're talking about on? And by the way, it felt like the officials knew the right way right away because it was a pretty quick review with the Jeremiah touchdown. Was there anybody in the press box, anybody you could talk? Because I never understood it. I'm like, he caught it. He ran. He never lost it. Like, what are we talking? How in the hell could it possibly be a fumble when he still has the ball? Like, I didn't understand any of it. Did you ever get a straight answer on that?
They had a pool reporter talk to the officiating crew after the game. They actually had two questions because nobody understood how – Jake Sean Barham was not ejected for headbutting an official. And you know, they deemed it like a less offensive version of a personal foul. I don't really understand that with a contact with official. It was pretty straightforward. And then they were talking about, losing possession of the football going over the goal line. And I think you see a lot of times players, get to the end zone and I didn't understand the parsing of stepping out of bounds, the catch was made, didn't ever lose possession, and ultimately they just said that they didn't have any evidence that they could overturn that call. So I don't know if that's a straight answer or not, Bo, but they asked about it after the game, and I was watching it the whole time. Like, they showed 100 replays of it up in the press box, and I was like, well, the catch is made. There's control going into the goal line. You just have to cross the plane. I don't know what all this fuss is about, but
me either.
There were a lot of officiating calls in that game that didn't truly make a lot of sense to me. But stressing over that one felt especially puzzling to me.
Me too. I never understood it, and I never got a straight answer on it. I saw it the same way you did, my friend. All right, I'll get you out of here on this one. When did you? I'm guessing you were on the field post game. When did you become aware of Michigan trying to protect the M and then Ryan basically going to Sharone, I'm not planting a flag, just get your guys out of here? And they were very cordial, and Sharone listened and he got his guys out. But when did you kind of understand what was happening on the field?
He didn't really get them out. So I was in the tunnel, and the security was trying to barricade and separate the Michigan players that ultimately did leave the field. So I was about midway up the tunnel, and Sharone started, turning around and chirping there at Ryan, and I'm not sure what he was hoping to accomplish, but I got in there, and there was separation of security. I'm midway up this tunnel, which is the biggest disaster zone in history of college football. It is so stupid, and I didn't get an exact head count, but let me say, Bo, 20 to 30 Wolverines standing there behind security, trying to wait and spring a trap for Ohio State players when they eventually came up the tunnel, looking for more fights, looking for posturized fake toughness. And it was disgusting to watch. They finally had two or three players, I'll give them credit, Tinelli was one of them, saying, get out of here, let's go to the locker room, we'll get them again in 364 days. They were this fake tough guy act. The stuff that they do to try and instigate is absolutely absurd and gross, and they were just waiting there after Ryan Day had said, we're not going to do anything out here, we're not planting a flag, we're not doing this, and a bunch of their players still decided that they would wait there and try and get another opportunity to stir things up, and eventually some cooler heads on their roster prevailed. But I was expecting the worst, especially from where I was, and I wanted to be there to document it if it came to that, and thank goodness it did not.
I had not heard that part until you just said it about them waiting. I mean, good Lord. Get off the field, man. Get off the field. But that's the program he's running. I'm with you. The fake tough. Buddy, they were doing it after every play. Like, they wanted to pick a fight after every play.
That was their only hope. It felt like that was their game plan, Bo, is to try and instigate and generate personal fouls and ejections. And it's not the first time, and I'm quite certain it won't be the last time.
No. All right. It's we got another week. We'll have plenty of time to talk about it. We got Indiana in the Big Ten championship game on Saturday. Great stuff as always, buddy. Thanks for the time.
All right. Appreciate it, Bo. Talk to you next week.
There goes our buddy Austin Ward. He joined courtesy of the Bryan Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
This is the Jake Diebler Daily Show, brought to you by Encova Insurance.
67-66, Pitt beats Ohio State. And, Jake, what can you say? It's kind of stunning the way the game ends. And can you walk us through with from your perspective in there and what you wanted for that last shot that turned out in Pitt's favor?
Yeah, we wanted to get our defense set and, you know, make sure that we were anticipating the right action, and we were. You know, he just hit a really tough shot. Really proud just in general the way we responded in the second half. Disappointed in the first half, obviously. We didn't have enough kind of fight and didn't play with enough toughness. But, you know, we found a rotation there in the second half of guys who were really bringing it. And, you know, again, proud of the way we battled back. Just wasn't enough on the road.
We'll have another comment after this.
Hi, I'm Archie Griffin, two-time Heisman Trophy winner. The right coverage can be a game changer, both on and off the field. That's why Encova Insurance and their local independent agents are prepared for what's next and protect what matters most to you. Whether that's your home, car, business, or family, Encova's got your back with a policy that fits you perfectly. With local independent agents in your neighborhood and innovative insurance products that can be tailored to fit your unique needs, Encova's playbook is an easy win for your peace of mind. You can trust their team of agents to develop a strategy that's just right for you. And it's not just X's and O's. Your expert agent will guide you and provide insurance solutions so you can confidently manage your risk and count on a financially secure future. For auto, home, and business insurance, you want Encova on your team. Visit Encova.com today to find an agent near you. Encova is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics. Go Bucks!
This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
67-66, Pittsburgh. The Panthers defeat Ohio State.
Coach, more times than not, when you're on a roll, you got to lean on your upperclassmen, and you look at the numbers. Bruce Stewart not only helped keep the team in the game early on with his scoring, but man, he had 13 rebounds, which is a career high. So he was there like he always been.
Yeah, you know, he you can always count on him, Ron. I think the disappointing thing, you know, was we didn't rebound well enough throughout the course of the game. Thought we did a better job in the second half, really until the last 3 minutes. Gave him a few extra possessions last 3 minutes. And, you know, again, when you're on the road, your margin is small. And we can't give a team on their home court second chances at the basket. Some of those resulted in fouls. And so that's the stuff. I think there were some controllable things that, you know, again, we did well for majority of the second half, but didn't do well enough in the first half and dug ourselves a hole.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Progressive Insurance.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Phone is on. Get in the spirit of the season with a new Toyota. Now through December 1st, get 4.75 APR financing on remaining new 25 Corollas and Corolla Hybrids. Excludes GR and Corolla Cross. Or lease a gas-powered 26 Corolla LE for $199 a month for 39 months with $36.99 due at signing. With approved credit through TFS. Tax, title, and license extra. Call 1-888-36-TOYOTA for details or go to toyota.com. Toyota. Let's go places.
Tis the season to be hungry at Roosters. That's why for every $50 spent on Roosters gift cards, you'll receive a $10 Rooster Buck back in your stocking. May your holidays be filled with friends and family, love and laughter, and of course, Roosters Wings. Go to roosterswings.com today or drop by any Roosters location to purchase your $50 holiday gift cards and receive a $10 Rooster Buck in return. Happy holidays from all of us at Roosters. Roosters, a fun casual joint.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Reaction Monday. Hit it, fellas.
thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
Oh, what a week it's been for the Atlantic Coast Conference. Earlier this morning, it was announced NC State and Virginia will play the first regular season college football game in Rio de Janeiro in 2026. From the announcement, quote, the historic matchup between Atlantic Coast Conference universities, NC State, and the University of Virginia is scheduled for Saturday, August 29th, 2026, at Nilton Santos Stadium in Brazil. In a statement, ACC boss Jim Phillips said, we appreciate College Football Brazil for this incredible opportunity to celebrate our student-athletes and highlight the global appeal of the ACC, our schools, and the sport of football. We're proud of both institutions for leading the way in this historic event and our partners at ESPN, who will broadcast this premier event. End quote. Thing or not a thing.
I'm going to give you two things off of this. Number one, I used to host a show called Crew Extra. And it was a television show weekly that I hosted for 2 or 3 years. I would consistently get guests from the crew to come on, and many times they were from other parts of the world. And one of the most stupefying things for them to wrap their head around was the idea that college anything mattered. Just couldn't get it. So I love the idea of going up to folks in Rio de Janeiro and saying, hey, you going to go to the NC State Virginia game? So that's number one. And them giving a damn. Number two, I know, because the Browns had to vet this, I know what playing in Brazil is like for an NFL team with the security that's required and all of the things that are having to be done to make it happen. I know how long that flight is. I cannot imagine that this makes any damn sense at all for about a billion levels, but for those two levels most especially.
We are literally having a conversation a half hour ago about the ACC football champion not being ranked high enough to make it into the college football playoff. Right. And the college football playoff is set up for the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the ACC to make sure they get someone in there.
Mm-hmm.
And their champion may not be good enough to do so. Now you're giving us two ACC teams to start the season, which, you know, good for them. They'll be the first game on the college football slate, but not here in Brazil, where football isn't their number one thing like it is here in this country. Good luck getting people showing up to that.
Could be a heck of a year for Virginia if the Cavaliers are able to beat Duke in the ACC title game, make some splash in the college football playoff, and then open the year in Brazil. That's something.
Like, so the sixth seed would be, if Virginia wins, they'll be the 11. So they'll be, that'll be, what, maybe Texas A&M?
Yeah.
Or Oregon? Probably.
I think I had Oregon sixth in my last one.
Ole Miss, maybe.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M pushed Ole Miss back a little. But yeah, boy, what a bunch of nonsense.
This screams because Michigan's game next year got canceled already. This screams getting canceled.
I don't. Yeah, I just don't see the appeal down there at all for it.
We'll do a big old NFL segment in the 11 o'clock hour and then more NFL tomorrow. But the Steelers lost to the Bills last night, 26-7. Pittsburgh 6-6 on the season. At one point during the game, you could hear it in the television, loud chance of fire Tomlin at Acrisure Stadium. And after the game, Tomlin was asked about the chance, quote, man, I share their frustrations tonight. We didn't do enough. That's just the reality of it, end quote. The 53-year-old Tomlin's the longest tenured coach in the NFL. He's never had a losing season, thing or not a thing.
Yeah, and I think Cole's probably in line with this, too. He's our resident Steelers fan around here. Steelers fans are fed up with him, and I don't know if they're just wildly spoiled. That's my hunch, is that they are. I think there's a direct correlation with Mike Tomlin no longer coaching Super Bowl contenders, and they're, what is for them at least, been kind of an endless search for a franchise quarterback. I hate to break this to you, kids. This is just breaking news. If you don't have a quarterback in the NFL, you don't have anything. You have to have one. And then the other thing that looks crazy for them is, like, how could they have not been able to handle George Pickens? Like, if you have George Pickens and DK Metcalf for Aaron Rodgers to throw to, who's struggling, certainly, has a broken hand and a bloodied nose. I mean, that was a crazy game for them. They booed Renegade. Did you guys see that? They booed Renegade. Brooke Pryor said they booed it.
two of the most iconic song stadium experiences this weekend go very different ways.
Yeah.
That George Pickens thing, I'm still waiting. That's going to blow up soon in Dallas. It's working right now, but probably eventually that's going to blow up.
Still in the honeymoon phase, you say?
I'm going to bank on the side of the Steelers in that one because they've had just had such a track record with that. I understand Steelers fans' frustrations from the point that the Cleveland Browns have won a playoff game more recently mm-hmm. than the Pittsburgh Steelers. But this is a guy, again, this coach has never finished below 500 in his career. And you mentioned they have not had a franchise quarterback since Big Ben walked out the door. They've tried many a different thing, and none of it has worked. They are still have just as good a shot as anyone here to win the AFC North and make it into the playoffs again. I would just caution Steeler fans, be careful what you wish for.
Do you know how long do you think Mike Tomlin would be unemployed?
Not long at all.
If he wanted to coach, he would coach next year somewhere else.
Correct.
He'd be the number one guy everyone would try to. He'd be like Vrabel. Be the same thing. Be just like Vrabel, where he'd be unemployed for about as long as Mike was unemployed. And that was it. Final hour of the program coming up next. We kick it off by blitzing the Buckeyes. This will be a lot of fun. We do it coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Question from a listener. Do you dopes ever get tired of talking about Ohio State? No. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Texting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reese, sir. For the first time since 2020, Ohio State's going to play for the Big Ten Championship. Buckeyes are 12-0 and 5.5-point favorites over 12-0 Indiana. Saturday's kick from Lucas Oil Stadium is 8 o'clock. OSU's Ryan Day will hold his weekly press conference tomorrow at noon. Coach Day will also join a special Tuesday edition of Buckeye Roundtable. In other college football news, LSU will introduce Lane Kiffin this afternoon as their next head coach. Ole Miss promoted defensive coordinator Pete Golding to be their head coach. In the Big Ten, Michigan State's going to reportedly hire Pat Fitzgerald after firing Jonathan Smith over the weekend. And the basketball Buckeyes are off until Saturday. Hear from OSU's head coach at noon today on the Jake Diebler radio show. While the Blue Jackets battle the Devils tonight at 7, you can hear it on The Fan with coverage at 6:30. This update is sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Get a holiday loan and choose loan amounts from $1,000 to $5,000. Visit BMIFCU.org/holiday loan for details.
The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Reaction Monday edition of the program. Time to blitz those Buckeyes. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present Buckeye Blitz.
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers. Visit Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
All right, we do this well. What do we do well, Reese?
Well, we handle pressure. I also had handle adversity. Mm-hmm. I know that was talk leading up to the game was how are the Buckeyes going to handle adversity? And my pushback was a lot of times teams create their own adversity. Ohio State did just that. You throw an interception on your second pass play of the game and you handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And this team doesn't break. No. And it's really hard to see a time that another team will force this team to break.
I agree.
I'll tell you what we do well, and we do it better than anyone in the country, and that's play defense. This defense, especially at the beginning of the game, was not put in the greatest situations, and they just held Michigan every time to those field goals. And then in the second half, to put the clamps on them like they did, -8 yards rushing. I don't know how many times I can emphasize that. They went into the half with 108 yards rushing. They finished the game with 100. That's impressive as hell.
Just to buttress your point, this is the last defense that was kind of on this level was 2011 Alabama. They gave up 8.2 points a game. Ohio State is currently lower than that. Other than that, you got to go back to like the 60s and the 80s, 70s. I mean, there's just no. It's the best defense in the country, and it's historically good. You know what we do well? we have the best program in America. It's not particularly close. You are the apple of the college football world. Everyone's going to want to tear you down. But this level of greatness over now 25 years with three different coaches winning at an 88% clip, it's unheard of. It is unheard of, this level of dominance in a world that has NIL and free portal, and you got to win. This isn't like the Columbus Kiwanis Club, you know, awarding a national title. You got to go beat great teams over and over again to be able to do it. And they've done it with three different coaches. It's crazy how good this is right now. It truly is. Enjoy all of it. Won't beat Oregon/Indiana if we continue to do what, Reese?
Kick field goals when you should be scoring touchdowns in the red zone.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only play that first series where they found themselves there and gave the ball to C.J. Donaldson twice and then tried to quarterback sneak it. Like, the fourth down play was the best one. They just couldn't execute because Bennett Christian was offsides. But when you're there in that red area, those need to be seven from here on out.
I don't think there's anything. I've said for a long time the only team in the country that can beat Ohio State is Ohio State. And I'm not even sure about that now because this defense is so daggone good. I think no matter what happens, the defense can overcome it and cover it up.
I think the spirit of what you're saying is right. I do think that the only thing that they struggle at is what we've kind of coined around here, the short red zone. That they don't have something that they can count on inside of 3 yards. And they've tried a bunch of things. I mean, they have. I mean, I don't know. Like, do you try a wildcat? I don't know what it is. Julian did have a couple of big scrambles. The one on third down where Ryan ran like 4 yards alongside him. And then he did have a couple of keepers where they got a little tush push and he was able to pick it up. But that's probably it. And that's nitpicking because I think you're probably right, Vic.
And he had the one tush push where he kind of slipped. He went to plant and his foot gave out on him.
Yeah. I'd like to see more of this. What would you like to see more of, Reese?
Isaiah West.
Yeah,
the way he was bouncing off defenders, like that's a lot of fun in that Buckeye backfield.
My only issue with that is then you don't get as many carries for Bo Jackson, and I really like seeing him run the ball. I'd like to see more 20-play drives. I know that's hard to do, but gosh, it was fun playing bully ball. And it was even more fun playing bully ball against them.
Dude, that might be the greatest 20-play field goal drive in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, that was unreal.
Bo, I thought I was watching Hilliard Davidson.
I know. Where's Bo Delandy? I mean, my God, they ran it. It just ran it over and over, and they couldn't get off the field. It took 12 minutes a clock, and it manifests in a field goal, which I'm sure pissed Ryan off. But it just was like, good Lord, how dominant can you be? There's not much I'd like to see more of, but I do think there's more to Brandon Ennis. I love the little slant play they ran with him where they called him in motion, then brought him back, and then he kind of went right off of the shoulder of the tight end for the touchdown. Him and the tight ends are coming along. I'm with you on the fourth down play. Jelani Thurman would know he's in 1,000 yards of him if – you know, so they got Kesmerick had the big play in the first quarter to pick up the first down. So, I mean, you're just looking for things to look for things. There really isn't anything. They do everything about as well as you can do it. Coach, you earned his courtesy car this week. Who do you got, Reese?
Well, you guys, I mean, did enough chatter about the defense. Matt Patricia is the obvious choice here.
Yep.
I mean, they all did. Like, everybody gets a car. I mean, it's Oprah now. Look under your seat, Ohio State coach. But the job Patricia's done. And especially after the game, the emotion that he showed in that bear hug. He almost tackled the head coach.
Yeah.
You haven't gotten that from your defensive coordinator in such a long time. And the energy and the presence that he has on the sideline with those players is so infectious.
Reese, you should have told me that's where you were going. I'd have given you the pencil while you said that so you could have that while you're saying that. To me, and Patricia's great, and it could be any of them here. The obvious answer here is Ryan Day. 16-0. Since that game last year, everything Ohio State has done since that moment has been to perfection. And it was Ryan Day that hired Matt Patricia. It was Ryan Day that brought in Tyler Bowen, who was doing such a good job with that offensive line. It was Ryan Day that hired James. Everything Ryan Day has done, for the most part, since a year ago has turned to gold.
Yeah, those are the two that jump out. Two others that I want to bring attention to. Number one, my guy Threes, who fought like hell to get zero in his room and eight in his room. Those are guys that not everybody knew exactly what to do with them, but he saw this in them. And now both of them have gold pants, and both of them are going to be drafted in the top 20 of the NFL draft. That's coaching right there. And how about Carlos Lachlan? Did you see him yelling, "Hey, Tony," postgame to Tony Alford?
I was good. Whoever caught that on video... Yeah, he chirped him from across the field. It was great.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Who's going to mess with Coach Locke?
It was awesome. And his dudes are dudes now. Like, they brought those guys, that room along slowly. Those young kids are getting after it. Game balls offensively. Who do you got, Reese?
For me, it's the quarterback, Julian Sane. I mean, that's a hell of a way to respond. I think he had, like, two incompletions after that interception. Just incredible poise, incredible grit and toughness that he showed the entire game. In a freezing cold environment that the other quarterback had almost a full sleeve on and gloves.
And no chance.
Yeah.
I'm going to give my game ball to the offensive line, but when they come up to grab the game ball, I am going to specifically hand it to number 77, Tegra Tshabola, because the offensive line dominated that football game. Tegra Tshabola has been the weak link of that line all year, and everybody has said it, and everybody has pointed it out, and everybody has said it's time to get rid of him. It's time to put someone else in there. They have done that every game this year. They have rotated at right guard, except yesterday or Saturday when they needed it the most. Big number 77 may have played his best football game of the year.
He was incredible. The offensive line was incredible. Julian was out of this world. I talked about him at length earlier, and I'm going to talk about him a little bit later as well. You could go Bo Jackson here for sure. I mean, he was incredible, a true freshman, first time in the game, all of it. But I'm going to go, I think you also have to go 17-4. Like, they knew their bodies. That staff knew their bodies. The training staff knew their bodies. Those two out there are cheat codes. When all of a sudden you paratroop in NFL first-round picks at receiver and you see what the offense can do with it, you could have kept throwing it all second half, and I don't think it would have been a problem. But just appreciative they were both there. It's a warm blanket when you saw 4-17 warming up. Game ball defense, Reese, who do you got?
I'm going to give it to Brutus Buckeye. It was a hell of a job crossing out the M and then writing script Ohio in the other end zone.
I'm going to give this game ball to the offensive line as well. Because they kept the Buckeye offense on the field and the Michigan offense off of it. I don't know if I ever remember a game where the defense only had to play 43 snaps.
Oh, boy. No. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go here. Kenyatta Jackson had probably the best game of his career in this game. He was unbelievable. I'm going to go Caleb, though, because I think he allows for almost all of it. There were several plays where, like, there was a shift that looked a little different, and you see him, like, physically pulling a guy and putting him on the other side. He did it once with a Lorenzo Styles in the slot. Like, you got to get here. He goes from line of scrimmage to 18 yards back to line of scrimmage, all in the blink of an eye, all with the answers to the test. It has been such a luxury and privilege to watch that kid play football over the last 2 years. Man, there's no replacing him. It's one of the all-time runs. It's got to be like what it felt when Mike Doss graduated. Like, how do you ever respond to this?
And I'm guessing if we watched the All-22 from every game, we'd appreciate him even more.
That's the thing with him. Then you really see it. Big Ten threat level. Who around the league impressed you this weekend, Reese?
I wouldn't say they impressed, but they're the next team up, so it's Indiana. I mean, I guess congratulations to Penn State. You're going bowling.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations, Penn State. Congratulations, Oregon. None of it matters. It's Indiana.
Yeah, I think, and this is, I'm going to get into this a little bit later in a second here, in addition to the Julian conversation, but I think it is Oregon. I do think it's Oregon. I think that they have, if they can get healthy at wide receiver, they put it on Washington pretty good at Washington. I talked, Washington's a little different at home than they are on the road, but they handled that game in a big rivalry game for them. You have our attention now. Who around the country has your attention, Reese?
Indiana.
Yep, Indiana.
Because outside of, There was no real impressive team. I mean, Texas Tech bombed West Virginia.
Yeah.
But from a national standpoint, it's like there's nothing there that Ohio State... Because, again, you look at it as, can Ohio State take on this team? And I just don't see it.
Yeah. You're probably right. I think Texas Tech has been a scene all year. Their only loss came without their starting quarterback. So they certainly have my attention. Nothing in the SEC is too frightening. It just really isn't. I watched a lot of college football this weekend. Can this team win it all? Great. I'll save our time. It's an A+. Which brings me to something I wanted. We were going to talk a little NFL, but I'm going to save that for tomorrow because I want to bask in the glory of all this. I did quite a bit of out of market radio last week, and I was asked a question while I was doing a hit down in Atlanta that I want to pose to you two guys, and we will do that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
A lot of hosts have been on our airways in the past 30 years. Some good, some bad, some really bad. Anyway, sorry for that. The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Jackets hit the road for a battle with the Devils. Live fan coverage starts Monday night at 6:30.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating and Cooling.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Fan.
Looking for
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
A partly sunny and cold start to December today. We'll see temperatures only in the upper 30s. And then for tonight, lows drop into the 20s. With snow developing overnight, could have some heavy bands possible. When all is said and done, we are looking at several inches into the Tuesday morning commute, which could make it messy, so plan ahead. We do start to dry out and the snow tapers off by the second half of the day on Tuesday. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
The only thing better than watching football is talking about it. So we invented Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
The Fan. First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
Oh, listen up, kids. Get ready to play, win, and celebrate big at Eldorado Scioto Downs, your ultimate Caesars Rewards destination. With Caesars Rewards, you're going to have rewards every time you play, stay, dine, or shop. Not just here, but over 50 Caesars Rewards destinations across the country. From unforgettable getaways to incredible culinary experiences, members enjoy exclusive perks and benefits that make every visit worth it. At Scioto Downs, the excitement is nonstop. Take your pick. More than 1,700 of the hottest new games. Sip on award-winning craft brews at the Brew Brothers Microbrewery, or dive into Guy Fieri's Trattoria, home of the Out of Bounds 68-layer lasagna. And the energy just keeps on building. Scioto Downs has been chosen to host the prestigious Breeders' Crown in 2026. It's 12 championship races. It's one of the biggest events in harness racing. It's coming right here to town. So come experience the action, the rewards, and the unforgettable moments that are waiting for you at Eldorado Scioto Downs, a Caesars Rewards destination where the rewards never stop. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966. Visit caesars.com/Scioto Downs. For details. This is a pretty good one out of Al, bringing up Coach Walton in terms of a courtesy car. First pair of gold pants after playing for Coop, and then the last 4 years, I'm happy as hell for him as I am for Coach Day. Good job out of you, Al, for bringing that to the attention. This was a question that I was posed. This was before the game on Friday. I was doing an out-of-market hit down in Atlanta, and the host asked me, who in the country are you concerned about? From Ohio State's perspective, it's towards the end of the interview, and I thought Ohio State would win. I think I picked it 27-10. I think we were all kind of in that realm when we did picks on Friday. We're in the 20 something to low teens type situation, so we pretty much nailed kind of how it would go and the feel for it. But he's asked, "Who do you fear? Who does Ohio State fear?" I said, "Well, I don't fear anybody." He's like, "Well, who are you kind of concerned about?" So I'll pose that to you: who in the country can beat these Buckeyes?
Beat? It would take a lot. Texas Tech, I think. I think Indiana can. That might be where the Oregon.
I think the team that intrigues me the most is Texas Tech, because I just don't know. Like, I guess I haven't watched enough of them. I know they're very explosive, but I'll go back to, I don't know how anybody throws the football on this Ohio State team, and I don't think they're going to run the ball on Ohio State, but their defense has been pretty good. They've got the linebacker, Rodriguez, who's a stud player. Honestly, though, and I don't want to sound like that Buckeye fan, like I'm just, you know, the Buckeyes by a billion, but I don't think anybody worries me. I know there's a lot of people worried about Notre Dame because their ability to run the football.
Yeah.
But I saw Ohio State play Notre Dame last year, and I don't know if Notre Dame's better, but I do believe Ohio State's better. And Ohio State won that game by 11, and it really wasn't even that close. So I don't know if there's anybody that I'm really worried about.
No, worried. Yeah, I think, and that's, so this is, these are the, this was before I saw Friday night. So I did this Friday afternoon. I said, I'm curious how Texas A&M looks tonight against Texas. I was curious to see what that would look like. And it went a little different than I think some people thought. Texas took care of business in that game. So I was curious about that. I was curious about Georgia against Georgia Tech. And Georgia can't throw it. They can't. They had three freshmen on the offensive line in that game against Georgia Tech. They really can't throw it. Alabama can't run it. Ole Miss currently doesn't have its offensive staff. So who down there? So then you go, well, Oklahoma, like if Mateer could get back to kind of the rhythm, but they were incompetent Saturday against LSU offensively. Now their defense is good. Their defense is good. It's probably the second most impressive unit that I've seen this year. Well, but Texas Tech's hard just because of the league. It's hard to know. They've been dominant, and you have to give them credit for that. But that league doesn't have a lot.
That's the thing with the Red Raiders is hard. They're third in offense. They're third offense yards per game, 489. They're third in defense yards allowed, 11 or points allowed, 11.3. So like that's I think the most complimentary team. But then you keep going back to the Big 12 point. It's like, yeah. If they were an SEC team putting up those kind of numbers per game.
So,
The
next thing I go to then is, so what is it going to take to have a team that can go toe-to-toe? You're going to have to be really good defensively. You're going to have great defensive line. Which could be some of the reason why you feel the way you do about this one this weekend, Bake, because I just don't know on the lines of scrimmage that Indiana can hang. So you're going to have the lines of scrimmage that can go toe-to-toe. I think you have to have an NFL quarterback, and I think you have to have an ability to run and pass offensively. And you go, well, God, Bo, like, how many teams can do that? Not many is the answer, which is why it's such a challenging question. To me, I think the one that I keep coming back to is Oregon. They have an NFL quarterback. I know what they have on the two lines of scrimmage with Lanning. They've beaten us two of the last three times that you've played them. Now, you got them pretty damn good in the Rose Bowl last year, obviously. But it's even contingent on, can they get healthy on the outside? Do they have enough things on the outside that scare you? That's kind of the type of team it's going to take. I don't think Indiana's good enough in the two lines of scrimmage. The Notre Dame conversation is an interesting one because I do think their defense is really good, and I think their ability to run it would be the ultimate test. I mean, they probably, of all the teams that are in the mix, their ability to run the football is better than any other of the remaining teams' ability to do anything offensively. They're that good running it. Now, they weren't able to really run it against Miami, which was an apples-to-apples defensive talent situation. But those are kind of the ones. And I think the overwhelming reason that you feel even more chesty about this today than I even did on Friday down in Atlanta doing the hit is because of what I saw from 10. I mean, the kid threw a pick. I've been a big fan of his as can possibly be in terms of the way he's gone about his business. And I remember in camp saying he is the most natural thrower of the football I've ever seen at Ohio State. We got to see it. Okay, well, you've seen it. You've seen it. He's completed 80% of his balls this year. That's a college football record in terms of completion percentage ever. No one's done it. He's in year one as a starter. He's the co-Heisman front runner. He threw a pick on his second throw and then didn't really miss the rest of the way. In Michigan, in the big house, in weather conditions he has never seen before. He has never played at anything like what he played in on Saturday. And he was unflappable. Like, what could anybody throw at him? Because the defense is not going to give up. To me, the only way you could even beat Ohio State is if you tried to beat him 17-14 in a phone booth. But with that kid at quarterback, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I'd wondered, you know, about Michigan as they were going to try to sit on the football, and Ohio State sat on the football better. Like, Ohio State had a better time with just with the lines of scrimmage, with the attack. Michigan came out, I think, with the harder punch at first, but the response by Ohio State, and is anything you can do, we're going to do exponentially better. You know, all the questions you have about Julian Sain this season, where you go, how's he going to do in his first start against Texas? Pass that test. How's he going to do first time on the road, an atmosphere like Seattle, what Washington's going to present? Pass that test. I'm interested if you had a count of the Ohio State players that had played in their first snow game. That was another question. Wow, it's going to be cold. You're playing in Ann Arbor. You know, you're playing at the big house. You haven't won this game in 4 years. Pass that test.
I think the other thing to me that makes me feel the way I do is we still haven't seen Ohio State shift into overdrive.
No.
We saw them do it last year in the college football playoff. Is it coming? I would guess it's coming, and I sure hope so. But we have not seen them really press the pedal to the floor.
No, and I think even in the second half, I mean, that goes to a point I made earlier. I felt like Julian could have kept throwing it all he wanted. Like, he could have thrown to 4-17 as much as he wanted, and I think they would have completed most of them. But they didn't need to. I mean, like, in the second half of the Michigan game, up 17-9, Ryan Day was kind of like, yeah, we're good. We're good. We're going to get some more points, but we don't really need them. Like, you're not going to score on us. So, can I interest you in a 12-minute drive? I mean, like, that's what they did. So, I think they could have, I think if they would have kept spinning it, Saiyan showed no ill effects at all for the conditions. And that is tough. Because he had to take the visor out because it was kind of that sleety rain, that sleety snow, and that stuff can affect grip and all of those things. Not him. Didn't affect him in the least. He was more than fine. So that will lead to what is going to be kind of a crazy week as we get into it, as the week goes along, as we start to turn our attention to Indiana and you start to have the conversation about some of the big things that are in play this weekend, because there is one big thing that is very much in play for this weekend, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about it as the week goes along. Coming up next, 2 minutes from now, a little bit of Shelly time. When does what you've done through a quarter of the season become who you are? Because I think that might be where we are with the Jackets. We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service, because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. The Gloves. Shelly time.
Sponsored by Midwest Cards. Experience collecting in a whole new way.
All right, buddy. Since last we talked, kind of another similar one where the lead is given up and then you end up taking the loss, you get the point. But we're now 25 games into this. I wish I was starting with more happy stuff, but I suppose let's get the tough stuff out of the way first. We're 25 games in. We've got 27 points. Obviously, that's not going to do it. When does who you are early become who you are for the season, and how much of a concern do you have there?
Well, I'm going to go with there are pieces missing when that game gets to that point you have the lead. And, you know, guys like Jenner being out, Olivier being out, in those circumstances, they do things on the bench and on the ice that kind of elevate and regulate everything, you know. And there's players on this team now like Kent Johnson, you know, who's kind of, I wouldn't say fragile, but, you know, he's not being used in all those important situations that he wants to be in. You know, Fantilli doesn't get out there on 3-on-3. There's just, I don't know. There's a there's a process here to figure out who you are, but like every team in the league, there's a lot of key injuries, and I would think that this team would know exactly how they'd had to play in these situations, but when does it get to that point where you should know what you are? I think they're there. I think they should know exactly what they are to a man. You know, this is Werenski's trying to do everything he can out there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some nights where I feel bad for Zach because every time he's on the ice, something's happening positive. But when he's not, you know, it seems like things can fall apart. And, you know, Monahan had a goal, but Dean mentioned he's banged up. And, you know, there is an importance to how he plays to kind of regulate a shift as well. And you see lines changing, Marchenko's out. There's a lot of, I would say the concern level is higher on the outside than it is the inside. I think when this group is healthy, they win a lot of these games that they're just collecting points in. And I think that they'll be fine. But, you know, you hate to see these leads, especially against Pittsburgh mm-hmm. at home on Black Friday. It was such a disappointment in the building when that puck goes in overtime. So there's a lot to it, but they need to find a better way to play kind of that lockdown style, that sure style of hockey that they know how to play.
So how do you get there? I mean, is that something where you look, you know, you're asking guys to look in the mirror? Is there adjustments in coaching? Like, certainly the injuries are a huge part of it, but a lot of teams are banged up right now and you got to kind of weather it. And I think the concern, and if you're a Jackets fan, I think it's warranted, is, you know, how many games can you kind of stay on this pace? And the reality is, while it might be calm in the room and in those that are locked in on it, on the outside, there's quite a bit of concern, I think, with the way this thing has started.
Yeah. I still go to injuries. Yeah. You could look at, you know, some of the coach has one of his cards is ice time, putting players mm-hmm. in situations, trying to figure those things out. You know, Fantilli's your horse. I know he's young, but he's not as young as Luca Pinelli, who started 3-on-3 overtime. 6 periods into his NHL career is out mm-hmm. there, you know, against Crosby and those guys. I love the kid, but, you know, and if it works, that's great, but it's kind of swinging for the fences early in that one. You know, and then they end up getting the goal. You can pick things apart after a loss, of course, but I think there's still a brand of hockey that we all love about this team. I think they're going to be just fine. Marchenko could have broke that game open. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
There's those dynamics that you miss. The leadership of Jenner you miss, the leadership of Olivier and Gudbranson. Those are all real things. You know, those are all things that in the moments of losses we talk about. When you're winning, okay, that's great. I think great teams, though, do manage these times. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that you're seeing the parity in the league because a lot of teams have been missing a lot of key pieces early. But they're finding ways to get points and get it done. I don't think the level of concern needs to be that high. I think that you need to look at getting a healthy roster and staying afloat during this time. And then, because you do have to like how they're playing, and the lead thing, I think it's just a maturity. And right now they're not as mature of a team as they would be if they were healthy.
You mentioned the Fantilli. So that was I can't remember if it was the Maple Leafs game, or it was another game last week where it went to overtime and he didn't come out in the three. He didn't go until like the third shift in the 3-on-3. And obviously, as you said, he's the horse. Is it pushing button heads between the bench and the players? I mean, we talked last Friday about Kent Johnson's slow start. Like, he's supposed to be one of the cornerstone guys, and this has been, I mean, just 12 minutes of ice on, and that's kind of been where he's been all year in the loss to Pittsburgh. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of in the same boat as Chinnikov when you really look at it, where he's not getting, you know, where he's getting small opportunities to prove that he can play straight ahead and fast and back check and win battles and play the D-zone coverage. It's just the combination for him and a line has to be right, you know. And I think there was a lot of Van Riemsdyk last year that really helped him. James Van Riemsdyk was here, that veteran pro who saw a game like him. He's not here anymore, so he's trying to figure out where the chemistry is. And that's something the coach has got to figure out. With Fantilli not starting, that has to be something where it's a trust factor in with all that open ice. And You know, maybe he was saving him for later in overtime. There is a strategy to, you know, have that second wave of top players to come out. There is the strategy of having Lundstrom, the defensive player who hasn't scored a goal but can be reliable out there defensively. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, I don't know of a rift there, but I just, you know, that's the coach's decision on who's going every night. You know, you see it with face-offs. You see it with, you know, whoever's got that. That's a big part of coaching too, is the feel of the game and then who's going. So that would be up to Dina's staff to see, you know, who gets out there next. But, you know, I think we're getting a little we're worrying a little bit too much about these points. They still are collecting points. They mm-hmm. still are, you know, they still have a really good way to play in their baseline. I get the disappointment, but I still do go back to the four key pieces that are out of this lineup. It looks like Boone is on his way back. I'm not sure if he's back in tonight or not, but, you know, that's a huge boost to this lineup as well.
Yeah, I mean, that you're talking about, and Marchie was off to one of the best starts, you know, that we've had around here. Now he's down, so, like, that's some big ones. But guess what? The league is not going to shed any tears for you. You got in Jersey tonight against the Devils team that's currently second in the division. The good news to your point, Jode, you're only 6 points out of their spot. So that's how jumbled all of this is between the top and the bottom of the Metropolitan. But this Jersey team is, they're formidable.
Yeah. You know, it's really the buy-in to the team game, and I think, and we see this team is bought into the team game, and that's how they have to play these games. Metropolitan Division, Jersey flying high, a lot of skill, the goaltending, right from the goaltending out, this has to be a unit. We understand that with the Columbus Blue Jackets, so yeah, nobody's going to shed any tears. Listen, every team is dealing with big injuries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys have Jack Hughes, who's out. He hurt himself at a team dinner. He had surgery. I mean, that one is a freak accident. But every team is dealing with, you know, mostly hockey injuries, and no one's shedding tears from them. Everyone's trying to steal points from teams that are depleted right now. And I'm not saying that this team, but I do hear what you're saying. This team should be good enough to win these games in these moments. There's enough opportunities to win these games that they're losing right now with these leads they're having.
You got a favorite place that you eat in Jersey when you go there?
I usually go into the city, my man.
Nice.
It's a 10-minute boat ride, but I'm not in Jersey tonight. John Davidson, the Hall of Fame broadcaster, is filling in for me on the broadcast. I'm in Buffalo for Buffalo Winnipeg.
So this is so every Monday.
Travel day. Yeah, every Monday.
Every Monday.
The travel day. I should have drove. I mean, the rookie flew, and I spent my whole day in Detroit with everybody else that was in Detroit. Trying to get somewhere.
No.
Oh, it's fine. Well,
yeah, that's a tough spot though, man. There's nothing. That's my rule. Anything. Well, you're different. I mean, you got jobs to get to, but anything less than eight, I'm driving now. I just can't.
Yeah,
I can't do it. It's too much.
I didn't even consider it.
Yeah. Well. Right. Well, enjoy your game tonight, and then we'll hopefully the Jackets can get on a. Get this thing turned around with a win tonight. Always good talking to you, buddy. Enjoy. Well, your game will be at your Amazon Canada, right?
Yeah, in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, buddy.
You can get it on your dish.
Like the old days? Your parents had one of those giant ones that would move?
Turn that big white disc in your front lawn.
Turn that sucker the north. Well, there's other things you could find on that big white disc, too, if you knew where to look, buddy.
I'll see you, buddy.
See you, man. Yeah, good job. Get out of there on that one. We'll catch you at three things. We got a Monday nighter to pick as well coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The Daily Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by your Central Ohio Toyota dealers and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is the Ryan Day Show, brought to you statewide by Safe Light Auto Glass. Coach, what does this win mean to you and your program?
Well, it's just the first goal of our program every year is to win this game, and there's a lot that comes with this rivalry, and I'm just happy for our players, happy for our coaches. I thought everybody really did their job today in a big way, and On Indy.
When the clock hit triple zeros, what was the first thing that came to mind?
I was just smiling. I had a vision of what it was going to look like in this game, and you know, to see, you know, the Ohio State folks in the stadium and chanting the OHIO, and you know, that was a great moment for our players and fans.
We'll have a final comment after this.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safelite Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at safelite.com. Safelite Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Buckeye fans, choose chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged for a smoother finish. It's got that crisp, refreshing taste that makes those moments when you choose to rise above the noise and choose chill even better. Coors Light is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics, so crack one open and take a sip. Coors Light, choose chill. Celebrate responsibly. 2025 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Beer.
At Ohio State, we are the never afraid to innovate teams, the agile, get it done teams, the achieve more together teams, and the improve people's lives teams. Together, we are the Ohio State University.
Learn more about Ohio State at osu.edu/impact.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center, the team physicians for Ohio State athletics.
Coach, how proud were you of the performances that Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate had today, knowing what they had to go through to get back out on the field?
Gutsy. Can't say enough about the work that was put in. Sean Barnhouse, Adam Stewart, and then obviously Carnell and Jeremiah to get themselves available to play in this game. They know what this game means to their teammates, and they put it on the line and had some huge plays in the game. And man, it was gutsy by those guys, and says a lot about what they mean to this program. And I know all the fans who are watching the game appreciates what they did for the Buckeyes.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service, because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Drink recommendations, movie reviews, sports discussion, and whatever the hell Reeser does. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, we got to pick an NFL game. God knows I need it. I think I missed 7 of my first 8 picks on NFL, but I had a decent late afternoon evening, so to have some semblance of respectability, I need this one tonight.
Yeah, but I believe I've got you 6-9 heading into tonight, if that's correct,
right.
And Reese
right.
is 7-8. So Reese with a shot to go 500 here. We've got the New York Giants at the New England Patriots. Buck and Aikman on the call on ABC. The Patriots, 7-point favorites.
I'm just going to roll with my guy, Mike Vrabel. I'm just going to roll with Vrabes and give me the Patriots, and I'll throw the 7.
Give me the Patriots to win, but the Jameis Winston experience to keep it fun.
Did you just reverse on the air?
I just reversed on the air.
You reversed on the air. Mm-hmm. I like it.
I believe it's Jackson Dart.
Oh, well, then, yeah, give me the Patriots.
I don't know if that changes anything, but I think it's Jackson Dart.
All right. I'll take the Patriots. I'll do reverse. Yeah.
You did a double reverse
pass.
Well, I told him this morning, like, I had no confidence in my picks. And he was like, you got, you know, 1 to win to go 500. I'm like, well, all right, give me the Patriots.
Yeah. All right. What do we have in the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll asks, what are your early thoughts on Ohio State's matchup against Indiana in Saturday's Big Ten championship game? Your options, Buckeyes will roll. It's a coin toss. Hoosiers will win. 60% say Buckeyes will roll. 35% say coin toss. 5% Hoosiers win.
I'd be shocked if it's roll, but I think it. Yeah, I mean, we'll have all week to get into it. And I do think that this Indiana team is the second most complete team in the country. I do think that part's fair. I don't think they have as high a ceiling as Oregon, even though they beat them out there. But I think if Oregon can get healthy, I think Oregon might have a higher ceiling. But Indiana's pretty damn good.
What do we consider role?
I think when I think role, I think three scores.
I mean, I could see it. I like already 21. Said, I already said, I think it's minimum two.
Yeah. Well, we got all week to break it down, boys. It's going to be fun. It's fun to have games to talk to this talk about this week. Let's hit three things on a Monday.
One, two, one, two,
three things.
Sponsored by Scioto Downs. Your play, your perks, your Caesars Rewards spot.
All right, number one for me, if you've listened to me or this show at all over the years, you know that first and foremost, I am a fan of interesting, and I just found it so interesting and gross and all of the things in between, the Kiffin thing this weekend. Two things just absolutely slayed me. I was so jealous. I would have loved if this happened up here. The idea that Ole Miss fans went to the airport to flip him off is amazing. The idea that Marty Smith drove around a fire barricade to get a one-on-one with him is amazing after spending 36 hours in Mississippi like he did over the weekend. It's also amazing, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it's pretty amazing, and I'm just going to choose that it is, that an entire of his wardrobe was just put on the street by Ole Miss. God, I hope that's real. That's amazing. If they just wheeled out his clothes and just left him in the street, amazing. I'm just envious of all of it. I wanted Cignetti do that and then go to Penn State. That's what that would be like. It's an incredible thing.
Yeah, with regards to the Lane Kiffin stuff, I choose to believe it was Pete Golding that just wheeled his wardrobe out into the middle of the street. Like, here, this is my office now.
Here's your shirts.
Golding was named one of 63 Broyles Award finalists, or nominees, excuse me. That's a record of nominees for the award given to the best assistant in college football. Do we need 63 of them? Matt Patricia, no, obviously one of the more deserving nominees for this.
You get a nomination. You get a nomination.
63, you get a nomination. Yeah. Like, come on.
First thing for me, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, but it's the last 5 years in this year that make rivalries great. Losing those four made Saturday so much sweeter as a Buckeye fan. Living in the 90s made the run from Tressel to Urban to the first year of Ryan Day that much better. Unfortunately, a rivalry can't be a rivalry unless both sides can win once in a while. And as much as that sucks in the moment, God, it makes your moment that much sweeter.
I'll dovetail off of that for my number two. My boys' hatred for Michigan is palpable. When Julian threw the interception on the second throw, Beamsy sprinted upstairs in a rage. Like, he couldn't, here we go again. We're going to lose again. I'm like, dude, it's fine. This is going to be fine. Relax. It's okay. It's amazing, though. And that's, you watch the college football this weekend, whether it's this game that we spent most of today talking about, if you watch the Iron Bowl, I mean, Auburn had nothing to play for, but everything to play for. I just don't know how you beat college football in comparison. The NFL stuff, there were important games here and there, but every single one of those rivalry games, the records can be thrown out. They're thrown out because it's bragging rights, it's state pride, it's interstate pride, it's all of those things. It's just as good as it gets.
Yeah, this past weekend, I mean, it solidified. If you needed, I think, any example of why college football is the best, it was what happened this weekend on and off the field. I mean, there was drama everywhere. Like, you've got 7-5 Duke playing in the ACC championship game. It would happen in nowhere else but for college football. Even my Ohio Bobcats, who beat Buffalo on Friday, are not playing for the MAC championship. Miami of Ohio is because of tiebreakers. And I know it's unfair. I know Ohio fans, I know Toledo fans are like, what the heck? We beat Miami, but that's how this works. Win all of your games. Don't line your quarterback up at the 1 yard line in shotgun, Ohio. Because they did that against Ball State. You'll never guess what happened.
We talked last week how my Monday didn't get off to a great start with waking up late because the phone died and having to get a new phone. And I thought, oh boy, this is a sign of things to come. When then Ohio State's beat Michigan and they snapped their four-game losing streak to them. Well, this Monday didn't get off to a great start. I took my car to the shop last night so they could do an oil change today. I borrowed Dad's car. I didn't realize when I was thought I was turning off the lights, I turned on the parking lights somehow, so the battery wouldn't start today. The car wouldn't start. It was dead. Couldn't get into it. A whole thing. My point in that is we're going to be positive. Blue Jackets, it's your turn tonight to snap a four-game losing streak.
I mean, hopefully Fantilli could get on the ice. Be nice if they get on the ice a little bit. Boy, interesting. We'll have to get into this tomorrow. The favorite, current favorite right now to be Penn State's next coach is Kalani Sitake, the head coach at BYU.
Wow.
He's the number one guy there. Finally, number three for me, I did it. Three Thanksgivings. I made it. I ate a lot of turkey that I didn't. I one plate at each. I did it. I got through it. Now all I have is four Christmases to look forward to, so. Survive in advance, kids.
I got a great note from the Baton Rouge Advocate. For a brief moment in time right now, LSU's paying Lane Kiffin, Brian Kelly, and Ed Orgeron. It sends Orgeron his last buyout payment of $426,000 on December 15th.
Amazing. But there's no money.
That music means the very first Jake Diebler show of the year is next.
You have that to look forward to, which is nice. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
An encyclopedic knowledge of sports and other random things you may or may not care about.
I think I found my mentor.
Rockman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Listen up.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800.